Film Vault. Oh, I did it like on the beat that time. Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome to Film Vault.
Hit the post.
Yeah, you really did. That's Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts. Thank you for joining us on the Film Vault this week for our topic, top five actors never nominated for an Oscar, part one, American edition. We started off with just top five actors never nominated for an Oscar, but it turns out there are so many, or at least so many good ones, that we want to break it up into multiple episodes.
Originally, I was opposed to this here topic.
Why is that? The topic in general?
In general, yes.
Why is that?
Because it's kind of a weird time to be doing it, but then I thought about it. I was like, you know what? This year in particular has been a very good year for the little movie. It's been a very, very strong year. I've really enjoyed my movie-going experiences for the most part this year. I had a solid top three before April, I think, which is almost unheard of.
Wow.
However, the big movies that we've been anticipating and excited about have kind of been letting us down. So I think this is good prep work for an Academy Awards.
Oh, you're saying this would be more appropriate in an awards time?
Oh, right around awards season. Time. Yeah, right after when there was some kind of huge gaffe. You know what I mean?
I got
like somebody was missed. But I suggested that maybe we do. I would like to do a series of these. Maybe I follow it up in a couple of weeks with top five or movies that were shamelessly not nominated.
Yes,
it's just as a little prep for what is sure to be a very disappointing nomination season. I think it's going to be all the big movies and the little guys that might deserve some attention are definitely not going to get it this year. A lot of the time, it's deserved, but I feel like this year there's more good little movies than in years past.
Yeah, maybe. This episode
Brian says maybe because he has no idea.
No, I think you're partially right. No, you're probably
none.
I do think that this episode shares some DNA with, say, Oscar snubs, which we've never done, but we talk about, and maybe we'll talk about more in the future. But yes, this is more the body of work of an actor, has not been recognized. And I think it was spawned
crossover?
I can almost guarantee that it crossover.
And it was spawned by who?
Remember last year how shocked we were?
Todd McFarlane's Spawn, not that good.
Do you remember last year how shocked we were to find out that Gary Oldman was nominated for his first Oscar?
Yeah, I was one of them. I couldn't believe it.
I was floored.
When he got nominated, I'm like, yeah, of course. He gets nominated like every other year.
Yep.
He wins every other year.
Not so.
Not so at all.
Never won. Nay.
Did you
ever nominated?
Did you have that moment? Because I definitely had that moment where I questioned reality. I'm serious.
I absolutely did.
It's the same with when people talk.
I can picture him in my head at the Oscars.
When people talk about Oprah and how much they love her, that's when I question. I'm like, maybe The Matrix is real. Because this doesn't make sense. This is a crack in reality.
I'm seeing the same thing. Seeing the same cat twice in a row.
That was stupid. That was the worst part of The Matrix. That's not what deja vu is. Deja vu is not like you see something twice back to back. That was one of the few huge problems that I had with The Matrix, the original. Speaking of which, saw Atlas Shrugged. No, that's not wrong. Cloud Atlas.
Oh, I was going to say, you saw Cloud Atlas Shrugged?
Atlas Shrugged. The second part is already here and gone.
Yeah.
No one knows. No one cares.
Were you the one that told me about the thing that the reason they did it because they had to renew their copyright?
So far off topic. No.
And why is that off topic?
We shouldn't be talking about it because neither one of us have seen it. Neither one of us have.
I heard they did it. They made the movie only because they had to renew their copyright on it or something.
More about Ayn Rand.
Trademark.
And in such, while we do a little flick fest.
Oh,
yeah.
Please, flick fest.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Me first?
Yeah.
Okay. Anderson, I don't know if you've been reading the message boards.
Hold on real quick. This topic tonight. I promised the listeners last week as I was cringing throughout the episode. Mm-hmm. I promise you, as I do often on the After Disaster, I cite this might be the worst episode we've ever done.
Sure.
I said that on the Film Vault last week and meant it.
You meant it.
And I promised them a strong episode. And I feel pretty strong about my list of non-nominated American actors that we'll be going through here tonight, today, on this program. I think that if I'm happy, you should be happy because this is your field, Brian. You got to bring it today because you are Mr. Rain Man when it comes to actors and who's been in what and who's been nominated.
Names,
and you're very good at names.
Years.
I'm better at
that's
movies and directors,
from...
and you're better at actors.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe.
No. Maybe you got to bring it because I'm bringing it.
Last week was a good bit of ninja shit by
what
you.
That means.
Some Jedi mind shit last week because even though it was your category and your idea, I took the lion's share of the abuse online.
It wasn't my idea. It was
the lion's share. Lion's share of the abuse.
The listener who came up with the idea actually finally sent me a. Go ahead, Brian. Talk.
We have a comment section.
I would like to unthank Mike Cole.
Here we go.
Who is a listener? And he tweets me often, and he's the one who came up with a suggestion. Top five robot movies. Thank you.
Great. That sounds like a wonderful idea.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, it was one of the quickest responses I ever got from Brian via email.
I somehow responded before he clicked send.
before I heard the back clicking of the key coming back up off of the keyboard, I got a bing.
You heard the click, but the clack.
Mail, motherfucker.
That's right.
You got mail, motherfucker.
We have a comment section on our website.
No. You know what movie that's
no.
from?
No. What is
it? Euro Trip.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Remember when email began and it's like, you've had mail.
That's right.
But his, because he was a college kid,
right.
So it was funny, and his was his that, you got mail, motherfucker!
He customized. Remember, you can customize the sounds on your computer, and
that's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm saying. Remember when that was a big deal?
Brent.
I could do that.
You got mail, motherfucker!
We have a comment section on our website, AndersonandBrian.com. There's a comment section for every
I don't know why you would promote episode. This.
I like to see what people
it's
like.
Tar and feathering. Tar and feathering board.
I was burned in effigy. I took what you might call the lion's share of abuse this week, and unclear why, but people not happy with my performance last week.
Unclear.
Apparently, I'm smug. It's news to me, but I've definitely earned it.
Brian, you have like a face that is almost trademarkable of smugness.
No, everyone knows, how smug I am.
Uh-huh.
That's right. I own it.
All right, here's a very funny tweet,
okay.
Speaking of Brian abuse, from I've been meaning to read this for a few weeks.
Three weeks?
Yeah, I took a picture of it, screenshot, and I forgot to. It made me laugh aloud, which is rare.
Let's hear it.
And it was from Nick Duvey, and he tweeted me.
Oh, Nick.
Anderson, thanks. I forget. Well, because he was having a kid, and he was listening to the Film Vault while he was waiting for his child.
Oh.
He's one of the last real men who was like waiting in the waiting room,
yeah,
I think,
that's
waiting
awesome.
For the kid.
With
waiting
cigar,
for the nurse,
cigar in hand?
Waiting for the nurse to come out and say it's done instead of sitting there and watching all the mess occur.
Yeah, no,
who wants
or
that?
Filming it.
I am not watching my wife's vagina be ripped apart.
Can you imagine Logan hovering over his wife or his gay partner, the person they've chosen for the surrogate, mm-hmm. with it with a camera just
in
there?
Of course.
Ugh.
He's like, the light's really beautiful. It's really beautiful the way the
hold
light's
on, do that again. Do that
it's
again.
It's crowning. Wait, can you suck it back in, honey?
Can you get that again?
Yeah. Take two on the crowning.
I'm going to get it in slow motion.
Wow.
Get a super high frame rate camera.
You know what? So double it.
He tweeted me and he said, while I'm waiting for my child to be born, I'm listening to the Film Vault. And I said, oh, I was like honored. I said, thanks, man. Thanks, Nick. Good luck. And he wrote, thanks. He was finally born today and all is good. And he knows that I was married recently. And he came back with, so when are you and your wife going to start on Bald Brian's replacement?
Wait, making a child's replacement?
I thought it was going to be like one of you and the wife going to start on your own kid, but he slid right into on Bald Brian's replacement very well. And
you son of a bitch!
Very well done there, Nick. Thank you for that.
I think Nick tweets me as well, so...
Don't try and say the
no, I twisted around. Mm-hmm. So fuck that guy.
All right, here we go. Go,
anyway,
flick fest, what you have done. And
a commenter who calls himself Greebs.
Oh, are we back on the message
Greebs.
Board abuse?
He's outraged, Anderson, that I'm a film major. And I say film major because he capitalized it.
You're not
Brian
a film
is a film major who hasn't seen Dr. Strangelove or most Woody Allen films.
Valid
first
point.
Of all, first
valid
of
point.
All, first of all, valid point.
Yeah. Uh-huh,
secondly,
valid point.
Not a film major. I was an English major.
Well, you're a major figure in the podcast world,
yeah,
about film.
Films.
There we go.
I was an English major with the creative writing emphasis. Not
where they,
film.
Is that where they teach you to say cheerio?
They taught me the definition of smug.
When you're an English major?
That's right.
They teach you how to
that's how I became
eat
smug.
Crumpets.
That's
eat,
right.
Eat crackers.
Emphasis in smuggery.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what, Greaves?
Munching on tisk of toast.
Fair point. Fair point, Greaves.
Munching
point.
On ticks of toast.
Point taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, move on.
Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, you saw it?
Or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Oh,
1964!
Greaves guilted you into it, huh?
Well, not just that, but you talked about guilted. It so glowingly, and I've never seen it, and it's a icon of
before
film history.
Before you move on, talk about...
iconic film?
Before you talk about Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb,
that's right.
One of the all-time greats, I am going to predict that you liked it.
Directed by... Who's it directed by?
Stanley Kramer.
Oh, yeah, Stanley Kubrick, starring Peter Sellers in three different roles. George C. Scott, Sterling Hayden, who you may remember as Captain McCluskey from The Godfather.
Back
the
to Sellers real quick.
Who punches Al Pacino.
He was originally supposed to play seven separate roles, I think it was. In
I heard
movie.
Four.
No, but, it was supposed to be far more than three, and I believe it was seven.
Okay. I intentionally didn't take very many notes because I know that you would have a lot to contribute.
I've seen this movie half of it once, and I walked out.
Okay.
I don't like black and white.
I was going to say, this is in black and white. Don't let that deter you, good listeners.
No, don't let it deter you at all.
It is a satirization of the Cold War.
Most people would enjoy this film?
No. Most people, like general population?
Well, like people that listen to this show, this program. You got to think of like people that enjoy film.
Yes.
They're a casual to film files.
If you're listening to this show, it means you actively seek out quote-unquote entertainment about movies, and therefore you are into the history and the honor of films and Transformers, and therefore I recommend Dr. Strangelove. It was a very sharp, parts of it were very sharp comedy. I did there were some parts of it that maybe the broader comedy that didn't really hold up. A lot of the person I didn't really care for. A lot of the Dr. Strangelove hand stuff.
That was a Peter Sellers thing. You know, he had a huge following. He was kind of like, I hate to say it, but like, imagine Jim Carrey.
Right?
Yeah. Doing a role like that today.
And he's sort of a Mr. Bean.
He could do very little wrong. And yeah. I never was on the Peter Sellers train, much like many people. Because I'm not old enough.
Okay, sure.
I didn't like the Pink... Oh, God, blasphemy, I know. But I didn't like the Pink Panthers movie. I used to watch my dad growing up watching those movies. And I would get all excited because the cartoon would open the movies, the Pink Panther movies. Yeah. And then it would go into Clouseau, which was live action, Peter Sellers being British. And I did not do much for the child, Andy. I was like, what happened to the Pink Panther?
Yes, so the broad comedy doesn't really hold up. It's kind of silly. There's some very good subtle comedy. Like this.
George C. Scott stuff is fucking amazing.
George C. Scott stuff is pretty good.
Pretty good?
It's pretty
good. What?
It's pretty good. The phone conversations that Peter Sellers has had me smiling and laughing out loud a couple of times. Dimitri, don't you think I'm just as upset as you when he's calling the Russian premiere? You only hear his side of the conversation. And it's great sort of Larry Miller style comedy. It's one-man band kind of comedy.
Let me backtrack.
Well, hold on. He's calling the Russian premiere to. I'm gonna give him a heads up that there's some nuclear war heads headed toward his country.
He's trying to deflect.
Dimitri, don't you think I'm just as upset as you? That's pretty funny.
Let me backtrack and say I do love the Peter Sellers subtle comedy. And
it wasn't Transformers traipsing around a garden, but it was pretty good.
I do love the spoken word. It's the British slapsticky Benny Hill stuff that I never really quite got onto, and that's what a lot of the Pink Panther movies are in particular, is him fumbling about. But interesting fact: George C. Scott actually Kubrick. George C. Scott did not want to do goofy line reads and goofy takes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I read about Kubrick this too. Had him do. He's like, you know what? Why don't you just warm up and give me a couple practice fake takes.
And over the top. Do it over the top.
And Kubrick would like whisper to his cinematographer, his DP. He'd say, start rolling.
I'm using this.
Start rolling. And then they would circle take the first couple takes and use those. And poor old George C. didn't find out until premiere.
Yeah. He apparently was very upset about that. But he is very over
the balls on that man. Balls on Kubrick.
You can see the George C. Scott, sort of the DNA of that performance in Johnny Depp's performance as Hunter S. Thompson. There's a lot of herky-jerky, a lot of, let me just tell you about this.
I'm not a giant fan.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I don't like rehash.
Be that as it may.
I don't like rehash.
Yes. The parts with Peter Sellers as the British soldier working under Captain McCluskey, Sterling Hayden, are fantastic. I really enjoyed his sort of wordplay with him. He's trying to talk him off the ledge, but having no success.
A lot of witty, funny comedy, and kind of forgotten, and I don't think you have to be really that familiar with the Cold War to really enjoy it, but to think that it came out kind of in the beginning of the Cold War, at a time where like anti-war movies were pretty much unheard of, especially the movie he made before that was Paths of Glory. I mean, no one was making anti-war movies in 1957 when he made that.
Predates the Vietnam War.
But so very good movie. Check it out.
Very good movie. Did you find it?
Also, it was originally supposed to be like a much more serious thriller.
Sure.
And then they realized,
Based on a novel called Red Alert by Peter George.
And they actually started shooting it as somewhat of a serious thriller, and then they realized there's just too many opportunities for comedy here. Let's not do that.
Did you find it odd, as I did, that it's called Dr. Strangelove? Dr. Strangelove himself is a fairly minor... He's a minor character. It's like calling Star Wars the Obi-Wan Kenobi story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an important character, but you wouldn't... Dr. Strangelove is at least a third-tier character.
I think the Dr. Strangelove character kind of summed up everything they were trying to say, which is war is insane.
I think that's kind of why
they went with that. Why don't we move on to the next movie so that we don't spend an hour and a half flick-fasting movies from the 60s.
Anyway.
Why don't we do that?
Yes. Grebes, again, our commenter, pointed out, I hadn't seen Dr. Strangelove or most Woody Allen films.
Uh-huh. So you watched every Woody Allen movie.
Annie Hall.
What? Oh, my God, I forgot. You haven't seen this.
I'd never seen Annie Hall. I'd never seen Annie Hall from 1977, written and directed by Woody Allen, starring him, Diane Keaton, Tony Roberts, Carol Kane, Paul Simon as a role in this, a non-performing role, Shelley Duvall, and a young Christopher Walken before The Deer Hunter. Won the Oscar for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, and Best Actress that year, also nominated for Best Actor. What's overrated, in my opinion, is the Annie Hall as fashion icon.
Who was nominated for Best Actor? Woody?
Woody Allen was on a...
He was. I didn't realize that. Maybe I did.
What's overrated, in my opinion, I was saying, is Annie Hall as fashion icon. Uh-huh. It's like, I get it. She wore a tie in one scene, and that was a big deal, I guess, in 1977. But let's give it a rest. It wasn't that big of a deal. What is a little underrated is the writing. If anything,
underrated.
It's underrated. It's sharp. It's funny. Holds up.
How are you saying it's underrated when you just saw this movie and most people have been going on about this movie for the last 40 years?
That's what
I'm
saying.
And now you're like, I just saw it and I want to say it's underrated to all those people that have been talking about it for the last 40 years and I had no idea what you're saying.
That's why I said, if possible.
It's not possible.
It's not possible. Okay, well, it's just correctly rated.
Just watched it.
It's risk-taking writing and even it's even kind of surreal at one point. Woody Allen, I think everyone knows that he sort of breaks the fourth, even I knew that, he breaks the fourth wall a lot. He addresses the audience directly in the film. He also pulls, it is a very cool thing, which you don't see very often. I can't recall seeing hardly ever. He'll pull in people who you think are extras on the street. Like he's talking to the audience. He's like, you there. And he just starts to grab some woman who seems confused at first, and then they start discussing the plot, which is a cool
hardly
sort of
relevant.
Plot device. But it's a cool plot device. It's inventive writing.
Annie Hall's unique in that it's a comfort food. It's almost like a guilty pleasure, but it's so smart that there's nothing guilty about it. But
yeah.
It's just, I can curl up and just, you know, get inside that movie. It's just, it's so comforting. It's like a nice thick soup.
There's a great moment.
You know what I mean?
There's a great moment.
There's nothing threatening
exactly
about it, but it's fucking great and witty and snappy.
I don't have the same
snappy
view on it as you because it's new to me. And mm-hmm. A lot of the I'm familiar with the broad strokes.
It's new soup.
That's right. It's new soup. I'm enjoying it like new soup. Mm-hmm.
Still very hot.
Like someone who's turned vegetarian is like, oh, this vegetable noodle soup is delightful.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great moment early in the film where
it would be vegetable,
he's being
vegetable
driven
noodle.
Nuts. I imagine it's a lot like you staying in line in a movie. He's being driven nuts by some blowhard behind him talking about Marshall McLuhan and how he's going on and on about him. And Woody Allen's like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He's so off base. Mm-hmm. He's like, wouldn't it be nice if Malcolm McLuhan was right here? And he goes, wait, I have him right here. And he goes over outside of the frame and pulls him in. Mm-hmm. And Marshall McLuhan corrects him to his face, like, you have no idea what you're talking about. And again, third time's charm. This is sort of the DNA of smartphones. This is like what we have now to settle any argument. Like, I think that movie was 1977. I think it was 1979. Well, let me pull it up and settle this right now. We can't do that back in 1977.
Very, very similar to the movie that he did last year as well. Very similar.
Yeah. Midnight in Paris.
Yes. That's very, right. Very similar. Because remember, he was hanging out with these blowhards that were talking about these nonfiction characters,
right,
as though they knew who they were, but he actually did.
Yeah.
Because he was going back in time and spending like nights with them.
That's great.
So it's a very, very similar. Very similar. Gotta love that Woody Allen.
So, Annie Hall. Liked it very much. Two very funny movies, Annie Hall and Dr. Strangelove. Very different ways, by the way. Very different ways they're funny. Logan. I sent Logan a clip.
Isn't it weird that people actually have sex with Woody Allen, though? It's weird.
I think it's only one person now. But yes, back in the day, it is funny that people had sex with him.
Mm-hmm.
I find
Farrow.
It odd.
Mia Farrow.
Mir, as New Yorkers like Woody Allen called her.
You know what's interesting?
Mir.
As I've always said that Woody Allen, that Todd Solondz mm-hmm. is kind of like Woody Allen's evil stepbrother or
I
son.
I don't know that I've ever seen Todd
or
Solondz.
Wes Anderson.
Okay.
Or Wes Anderson's evil twin brother.
Okay.
And Mia Farrow is in Todd Solondz's most recent film.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not going to flick past it because I saw too many movies and I can't pick that one. I did write about it on my old AndersonCowan.com, actually. I've written up about seven or eight movies since I last saw you, Brian.
Wow.
Got some good ones up there.
How about
got
that?
Some small ones, some
been
things
to week.
Definitely check out. Yeah, I was busy on that there.
I was going to say.
On that there, that website.
Did you have
but
one
I got
day
some
where
good
you
shit.
Out like four or five?
Good stuff. I did like three in one day.
Wow.
I'm trying to be employ brevity, too, because if I let myself, I'll sit there and write for like an hour and 20 minutes. And then, you know, on top of the movie, I just don't have enough time in the day. I'm already sacrificing sleep.
You got to start doing drugs again.
It's funny you should say that.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I actually did that thing where I was like up real late and I put a little phone number in my phone to remind myself to make a call because I just have to get this stuff done over the next couple of weeks.
Sure.
And I'm
going
to need a little help. And then I woke up in the morning and I'm like, thank God. That person wasn't awake last night because I had much better judgment in the morning.
Yes.
I will not be calling that person.
You had a booty call that didn't happen.
But it was not for sex.
I understand. Logan, I sent Logan a clip. Why don't you play the clip? It'll introduce. It's very short.
Is this Geems? Geebs?
No.
Greebs?
You'll appreciate this.
Greems.
Come on, Bart. We're going to go sneak into an R-rated movie.
Let's call Bart and Fink.
You can't. I told my dad I'd wait for him.
Bart and Fink! Bart and
Barton Fink!
Brian went to film school. Hey, Brian's a film major. Greaves is right. You went to film school the last time I saw you.
The
Are
star
you kidding me?
Of Barton Fink.
You saw Barton Fink, Annie Hall, and Dr. Strangelove all in the same week?
Actually, no, Brian's I saw a committed. Film starring John Turturro as Transformers 3. No. Barton Fink, 1991, written and directed by Joel and Ethan Coen.
I love this man sitting across from
talking
me.
Talking
right
about
now.
Me?
Yeah, I love
oh,
you, buddy.
Oh, we're in love again. How about that?
I like that.
Starring
very much.
John Turturro, John Goodman, Michael Lerner, John Mahoney, and Tony Shalhoub. The rangy Tony
Monk.
Shalhoub. Yeah.
Monk. I love Monk.
This was on one of your lists.
Did I tell you I love Monk?
I never saw Monk.
It's been on a couple. Barton Fink's been on a couple.
Top five movies about movies, maybe?
It may have been. I don't know. Barton Fink's made a couple lists.
A couple times. This is a very smart movie. It is a very heady movie. Mm-hmm. It's a think piece. I do not recommend watching this casually. I would say pay attention to this movie. This is available on streaming, by the way. So don't do other things while you watch this movie because you're going to miss some stuff. And the movie is sprinkled, nay, peppered. With salted peppered with
spiced
literary references, biblical references, historical references. If you're a fan of book learning, you're going to love this film. It's a little bit, a lot less funny version of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Well, in the sense that Oh Brother, Where Art Thou was sort of sprinkled with a lot of literary
less
stuff.
Less fast, less speedy.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, it's a very different
burn.
Movie. But I'm saying in the sense that there's a lot going on writing wise.
This one's restricted narrative too, right? They never leave Barton Fink's side. He's in every scene. No?
Well, if you want to consider that restricted narrative.
That's restricted narrative. That's the definition of restricted narrative is with you when you're with one character through the entire film, every frame. This is the movie that the Coen brothers took a break from writing. I believe it was Miller's Crossing.
It was.
They got it stuck. And they said, you know what? Let's go take a break. And who takes breaks and writes another movie? A genius film? The Coen brothers.
That's right.
That's who.
It does feel like, I had learned that in my research of the film, and it does feel like the screenplay is two smart writers dumping a whole bunch of smart stuff out of their brain with their pent up, they're stuck, and they got a whole bunch of stuff they got to get out into paper.
And none of this stuff would have worked in Miller's Crossing.
Absolutely not.
So
which
they had to go somewhere else. Yeah. Absolutely not. I've not seen. I've been trying to get the
I know what it's about.
The wife to watch Barton Fink with me. She's scared. She doesn't want to. I kind of use her as a canary. If she likes it, then I'm not a hipster for liking it. If she hates it, then I am a hipster. And I'm unrelenting. I will still love a movie if she doesn't like it. It happens often. But I don't know if she would like
it. This is not a fun movie for casual film goers.
But she loves John Goodman. And this is the first role where I saw John Goodman that I really appreciated.
He's great.
His acting
ability. Fantastic in this, yeah.
He almost made today's list.
What?
Almost!
Yeah, I guess so, huh? I wish I would have thought. I don't have him on my list, but I wish I would have thought of him. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's artfully done. It looks fantastic. It's an old Hollywood set in 1944, something like that.
I wanted to live. He lives in a little studio apartment, and I found that so romantic. And I wanted to live in an apartment like that. And I looked, when I was going to school down in Long Beach, I looked at many, many brownstones with little studios like that and almost pulled the trigger. And would have had the parking situation move better. But I couldn't get parking in those areas. But I would have loved to have lived in a little tiny shithole like that. Just, I think I would have.
The Hotel Earl.
Oh, so romantic and
the
so
Hotel
awful.
Earl is almost like a character itself.
It takes a weird turn halfway through.
It does.
Much like Hudsucker Proxy towards the end.
I don't want to talk about such things.
Oh my! Really? That sucker's proxy.
It was a great ending. It's a great. It's sort of a semi-ambiguous ending. It raises more questions than it answers. Mm-hmm. I recommend this film. In fact, I recommend all these films. Annie Hall. I think maybe I like that one the
best. You took in a lot, Brian.
I did. It was a big week. Yeah. I had to flush my palate by seeing a lot of Transformers.
I bet you did.
Robots.
I bet you did.
All right, Fleck Fest.
I picture you just like
we're doing too long.
I picture you with fingers on your temples, rubbing them after this movie.
That's right.
And doing a little bit of a twitch.
Just temples mean balls.
And then going, pacing back and forth, sitting down, and then putting that smug face on, feet up on the ottoman in front of you and watching a full Transformers and just completely and totally decompressing.
Totally. I almost dislocated my shoulder patting myself in the back.
I don't know why you would. Pat. Okay. I don't have a list this week.
What?
Well, I mean, I do. It's in my head.
Oh.
Sessions, The Sessions. I saw the movie The Sessions.
Hey, it's on my list of top five most anticipated.
Wrote about it on AndersonCowan.com. Go check it out.
Oh. Dog's gonna talk about it.
Helen Hunt's naked.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Throughout.
How are her old boobs holding?
John Hawks is unrecognizable.
I love John Hawks.
I love him very much, and I will be shocked if he's not up for Best
Actor.
He has
been nominated for an Oscar.
I will be shocked if he's not up this year again. This one, like I say,
he's
in
up
my
for Winter's Bone.
I am going to continue to talk.
I'm contributing.
Whether you.
You interrupted me a lot in the last.
It was necessary. I was guiding you.
Necessary.
Like a dog going in the wrong door. I had to like say. Hey,
I do feel like Anderson does more interrupting.
Look at him coaxing the audience, coaxing the message boarders.
Listeners, if you agree with me, please. Let your voices be heard.
The Sessions. It's a story about a real life story about a man in an iron lung who is a virgin and doesn't want to be. He wants to get banged. He feels it'll make him an adult.
Does he want to do the banging or get banged?
He wants to get banged because he can still get an erection. He has polio, so he has full feeling all over his
body.
Wait,
is that a period piece?
I am being interrupted for the ninth time
questions.
In one movie. Period piece in the sense that it's the 80s.
Okay.
Berkeley, 80s.
So he grew up in polio times.
So, true life story, and he ends up employing the a surrogate to do such things. Surrogate, enter surrogate, Helen Hunt. Helen Hunt, exit close.
Sex surrogate.
Exit close. Sex surrogate. Enter Helen Hunt's body, exit her clothes, and you have about 60 minutes of naked Helen Hunt.
Yeah.
And naked John Hawkes, whose penis you never see. What am I always calling out movies that don't show cock? What's wrong with me? Anyways, cute movie, sweet movie, nice movie, dark movie at times. Much reminded me of Diving Bell and the Butterfly, but not nearly as good because I tried to be more light and sweet and funny with this one, and it didn't really work. In fact, I found myself looking at the watch, hoping for it to end more often than not.
Mainly
because John Hawkes is really good. He's going to be nominated. I'd be shocked if he's not. And he's a likable character, but he's not a lovable character. Mm. And for this story to really work for me, he had to be lovable. Now, maybe this is just me, but there's a couple scenes where he's a real pussy-ass bitch. And I get it. He's nervous. But the way that came across, he's like yelling at Helen Hunt in one scene. And it was such a turn-off for me. Kind of turned on the character.
Is that making him a pussy-ass bitch?
Because he was nervous. And she was taking the clothes off. Oh, holy God! It hurts so bad! He did something like that. And he's yelling at her. And I never really recovered from that.
Okay.
I know it's an odd little thing, but I never recovered. William H. Macy plays the priest who has to hear about his sexual explorations in church, and he couldn't do it in the confession booth because he has to be horizontal, does John Hawkes. O'Brien is his name. Mark O'Brien, I believe. Mark O'Brien? I don't know. Whatever. But
Brian?
I can't full-heartedly recommend this. However, a lot of bleeding-heart liberals and would-be sensitive people are going to go on and on about how much they love this movie.
Okay.
But I think those are people that like to think of themselves as sensitive, but they're not. Also, it occurred to me in this theater, as more people were talking behind me, God damn it's an epidemic, Brian.
It is. It's bad.
God damn it.
I blame the nice big screens that everyone has now, the home theaters, because it's blurring the line.
No.
It is. It's blurring the line between theater and home.
I work weird hours, so I see a lot of... you know what? All this being said, I don't know if you realize this, Brian, or the listener realizes this. I can go to a lot of screenings. Hope this doesn't sound gauche, but I can go to a lot of these screenings with the press and see the movies actually before they come out, which will probably be a service to the show and to the listeners to talk about movies that I've seen before they're even released.
But
however,
every other film podcast does that,
and
we're the one that doesn't.
When I go to those, I hate those people so much, and I don't like the theaters that much. A lot of time they're really shitty, tiny little theaters, and really nice chairs always, but really small little screens. Sometimes they're played on DVDs, and the sound system's not that good, and I can't fucking stand the people. And you know when people start talking about a movie as soon as it's over, so what'd you think, as they're like, you know, getting up from the seats? I hate that. It happens tenfold with these fucks, and all of them are entitled would-be filmmakers, kind of like me, and they're bitter
film majors like me.
They're jaded, and I have to hear them in the parking garage, in the elevator going down, ripping it apart or talking badly about it. They're almost always negative, so I try to avoid those. Anyways, so I go see movies during the day and
with the people,
so I get oddballs in there. But I think a lot of people are awkward pussies who catch up. And I got friends of mine, too, who I haven't seen in a few months, sometimes a few years. And they say, hey, let's get together. Let's go see a movie or something. Bad idea.
Talking time.
Don't do that. I say no. I always say, I don't want to go. I haven't seen you in a long time. I don't want to go sit in a dark theater and be quiet and stare at the screen. But a lot of people do it. But they don't be quiet. And they catch up. These folks behind me were catching up.
I don't like that.
Granted, it was a dull
movie.
Who
does that?
Granted, it was a dull movie. But don't do that.
Was it The Sessions?
It's The Sessions.
That's not... No, that's dull. That's too bad.
Okay. I just finished saying that.
You didn't say it was dull. You just said that...
Said it was slow, and I was watching my watch, and I couldn't wait to get out.
I guess that's dull.
Yeah, that's dull. And then... okay. One of my flick fact holes isn't going to come until later on in this episode, because it's very apropos.
Okay.
Very apropos. Okay. So I'm just going to give a quick little mention to a movie that's streaming right now. Not really even a movie. It's an interview with Steve Jobs, the lost Steve Jobs interview. It's streaming on Netflix. You can watch it right now. It's like about an hour. And the girl and I watched it. Very, very interesting. He is like a modern day, or was like a modern day Ayn Rand character. Okay. I love the way this man thinks. Now, I've not read his book. I'm not that kind of a fan of his. I really hate him as a human being, or like, at least I like to say that. But after watching this interview, I mean, I've seen a lot of interviews. I love the Pirates of the Silicon Valley and the Nerds, Triumph of the Nerds. I love his story. But this is an interview right after, soon after he was fired by his own company and he was working on Next. And it's our very candid job. Steve Jobs interview, and to hear him talk much
like... Oh, this is before he went back to Apple and did the iPod.
Before, like a couple years before, I think. And he was talking about things so frankly, and he makes so much sense, and he's talking about how Windows just doesn't have taste, and I mean, he's just, he's heroic. It's just a great interview.
Wow.
And I think a lot of listeners, I think you would love it as well.
Sounds like
Him or hate him, and the man was a visionary, and we need more of those guys, especially in today's climate where no one can fucking make a decision, and everyone's hands are fucking tied behind their backs. It was awe-inspiring listening to this man talk, much like Rourke from Fountainhead. Not to get all literary on your ass, but it's my favorite book ever, and I love Rourke's unflinching, will not submit to what popular belief is, and that Peter fucking Campbell, not Peter Campbell, I don't know.
Bruce Campbell?
Peter whatever his name is. I always confuse him with Peter Campbell from Mad Men. Anyways, I'm going on and on. Sorry. Settle down. And then
so
finally,
finally
I saw a movie that was... moving on to the third movie, I saw a movie called Gone Baby Gone, maybe the worst titled movie in recent memory.
Agreed. Bad title.
Horrible title. Funny thing is,
it's
I
about a baby who's gone.
This, what was that?
It's about a baby who's gone. Baby.
Interruption 9. Gone. I thought Ben Affleck was in this. I ignored this movie to the point where I knew nothing about it because I was banning it. I had no interest in seeing it because Ben Affleck's...
There's another Affleck.
Because of his association with this film. However, he is not in it. I was delighted to find out. I thought that the movie took place in the 40s. I don't know why. I pictured Ben Affleck with like a one of those Casablanca hats on, sitting in like an old classic car, saying "Gone, Baby, Gone."
Yeah,
I was anticipating that.
Never happened.
No, none of that happened. But I did nothing about this movie, which
the
is
words,
great. Which
the
is
words
very
were
nice.
Uttered, but "Gone, Baby, Gone." But yeah, it wasn't good.
The first half of the movie I liked very much. At first, actually, I thought, "Wow, you know what? If I wanted to watch Law and Order, I'd sit with my parents." It felt very Law and Order. But then it got darker, and the language got filthier, and the violence started kicking in, and I realized, hey, it's an actual movie. And I really liked the pacing, and the storytelling was great. And it was a well-directed movie, Mr. Affleck. I can admit that. Yeah. Second half, not so much, and then I tried to get all heady, and I really... Morgan Freeman was noticeably distracting as the police chief. As soon as I saw his face on the screen, I was like, ugh. I love Morgan Freeman as an actor, but he was just distracting in that role.
Sure.
But whatever.
Ben, did you appreciate my favorite line of the film? I love children.
No.
Oh, those one character's famous last words.
Oh yeah, you thought it was funny.
I laughed.
You thought
at you,
and you thought I would be laughing
I
as well.
I love children.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't really stick with me, Bradley.
Laughed. Okay. Maybe you were expecting it.
Perhaps. Maybe. Yeah, because you told me. That's
I know.
Right. And then it came.
Sorry, buddy.
You listen. I saw that movie. The night that last time I saw you, so it literally that feels like 3-4 weeks ago because I've seen too much since then. I've seen like fucking 10-11 movies since then.
Jeez. You sound like someone's been to war. I've seen too much.
I haven't seen too much, and you know what? I've only written 6 pages. Wow, it's a pretty good week actually. Wrote six pages,
pages,
wrote seven reviews, maybe 8 reviews, rundowns of movies for my website. 6 pages of my script, and I saw 11 movies.
Wow.
The wife has not seen me.
How's the script going along?
She's delighted.
How's the script?
Script is getting darker. I'm trying to infuse humor into it just so I don't seem like the sick fuck that I am. But this, I don't want to call it torture porn.
Yeah, but your humor is dark.
Yeah, there's some funny shit.
Oh, boy.
You know, the wife doesn't know anything except for I gave her one character's name. She's always asking me. I'm like, honey, I can't talk about it until it's done because that's kind of my rule.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. I understand.
But I don't know if this
name?
Thing's ever going to get finished.
What's character's
you know,
name?
I made a deal with myself, which I'm not holding up to. But every time I see a movie in the theater, I got to write 2 pages.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's torturous.
I only wrote 6 pages, though, and I saw like six movies, though.
Yeah.
Goddamn movie pass, you're ruining my life.
Coming up next, top 5 American actors never nominated for an Oscar. A lot of people, Anderson, a lot of people buying gear from their favorite teams this time of year. I think what it is is maybe sometimes dads and brothers and such are hard to shop for, and so people are getting gear for the favorite teams off of Amazon.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So thanks, you guys, for clicking through and getting all sorts of stuff. We're going to run down the list of some interesting notable items as we do every week here.
So far, a very slow start. Let's go.
AndersonandBryan.com is where you go. And people got a whole bunch of gear from the favorite teams, including gear from, I'll just read off the teams, the Oklahoma Sooners. A whole bunch of Oklahoma Sooners.
You don't have to read each one individually, Brad.
Dallas Cowboys, Chicago Blackhawks, NHL Original Six, Anderson. Mm-hmm. Can you name the Original Six?
They're an Original Six.
Can you name the Original Six?
Yes, I can, Brian. But I'm not going to. Let's move on.
San Francisco 49ers, San Francisco Giants. I appreciate that. The Oakland Athletics, the Kentucky Wildcats.
Can you name the Original Six?
No, of course not. I'd guess there's probably the Blackhawks, the Red Wings. I'm going to say there's some Canadian teams like the Winnipeg Jets.
No, it's not an Original Six.
The Habs.
The Habs is. Yeah, that's right. It means farmer in French. Go. Move.
The San Francisco Giants, the Kentucky Wildcats.
They're not one of the six.
The Georgia Bulldogs. So enjoy your stuff. Someone got a speed loader for their revolver. So good luck speed loading your revolver.
Oh, wow. Got to kill those people quick.
A gun cleaning patch. Mm-hmm. They made gun cleaning patches.
Music is the best part of this entire segment.
A home theater system. So thanks for getting your surround sound home theater system through us. That's a very cool thing. I'll put your thing right there.
Okay, go. You should keep pace with music.
Hey, someone got your psycho shower curtain.
Yes, smart
psycho
move.
Psycho shower curtain.
Smart move.
A LaDainian Tomlinson San Diego Chargers keepsake ornament.
He's over.
Yeah, apparently someone bought a LaDainian Tomlinson San Diego Chargers ornament.
LT.
A Buffalo 66 movie poster.
That is smart. Yeah. I have two of those.
Disney princess bath toys.
Mm-hmm. Don't know why you include that in your list.
Mom, I hope those aren't for me. Mm-hmm. Someone got, beer making kit. Beer equipment kit. Yeah,
all right.
Good luck, man.
Just to say beer making kit and move on to the next one.
Over here. A mobile LED projector.
Next.
Garmin swim watch. A watch you can wear while swimming.
That makes sense. So it should just be called waterproof.
That's right. A commercial grade stainless steel heavy gauge stock pot.
Okay.
So good luck making stock.
And pots.
When you were registering for wedding gifts, Anderson, did you come across Shun knives? Shun knives?
No, I did not.
That's the high-end shit.
I don't know. She registered. She did it. I don't know.
You don't have to have Shun knives?
I don't know.
I know that because my wife registered for those, too. So someone got some Shun knives and enjoy those. They cut the shit out of it.
Okay, that's a lot of words you're using for one knife.
Apparently, they still make convection toaster ovens. Mm-hmm. Someone got a toaster oven.
Insult a listener.
Oh, what would it be without a Kindle being sold? Mm-hmm. A Braun pulsonic shaver system.
Okay, your 2.5 minute mark.
Speaking of pulsing, a Trojan Triforia vibrating massager.
Ooh.
So enjoy your Triforia. And probably to go with that, someone got some original Body Glide lube. I don't know what a multimeter kit is, but someone bought 20 of them. 20 multimeter kits. So thank you for buying those. They're probably for some sort of work, technical work. Two Roku players, a 32-inch 60 hertz LED TV, a Sony Blu-ray player, two of those actually, a Seagate Barracuda external hard drive, I'm trying to go as fast as I can, an Intel Core processor, two people got Jawbone Jambox speakers, the ones we're recommending.
I don't agree with using people's body parts so you can hear things.
I know, it's wrong. Not practical, but thanks for buying those anyway.
How do they come up with these names, the Bluetooth and the Jawbone? That's odd.
Thanks for getting those Jawbones.
What's next? The iStem?
Someone got a Nikon digital shockproof and waterproof digital camera.
The orbital tube?
Something called sexy hair, big hair, volumizing dry shampoo, which is insulting to me.
The cranium core.
That's right. Someone got a silky short bathrobe for their wife or themselves.
Why don't we just do a podcast where you read the entire fucking
and
list?
And finally, an Xbox 360.
You know what Anderson? That felt like? That felt like watching Lincoln.
It was educational. It was educational.
All right, fade that music out. Come in with my... Actually, I like your music so much more. So much better. But you know what? It works out because I get to listen to it. Focus on that.
Yeah.
While, not that I don't like to hear what the listeners bought, but...
I try and highlight interesting, notable things.
I don't know why you would open with, like, Disney play toy things for the bathtub.
Disney princess bath set.
Jawbone is not that interesting.
Jambox.
Jambox. Oh, actually, you know what? They're using that ad campaign to sell Life of Pi as well. I don't know if I like that. Uh-huh. The only thing more interesting than Life of Pi that I saw this year
is this raid?
Is probably a little thing in Chasing Ice, Brian. It's a documentary. It'll probably be the best documentary.
About drugs?
It's all about the eroding ice flow and glaciers melting back. Wow. It's a documentary, Brian. I'm calling it The Cove for Icebergs.
Really?
Yeah.
Do icebergs get slaughtered in the cove?
And icebergs get a lot of slaughtering going on. And the end of the documentary, you see a piece of ice. The size of Manhattan break off and slip under.
Oh, I got.
Oh, it's disturbing. And it sounds awesome. Here we go. Movies that were bought this week by
yes,
you, the
notable
listener.
Films.
The Dark Knight Trilogy. Smart.
How many of those were sold?
Eight.
Eight.
Eight Dark Knight trilogies.
Thank all eight of you for buying those.
The Iron Giant. Smart. Yeah. Make you cry. A cartoon robot that makes you cry. I'm not going
to
say the Muppets.
This definitely happened to me.
I'm not going
to
say Prime the Natural. What was that?
When Optimus Prime died, I cried.
Not going to say the Natural. I will say the there will be blood. Why don't I own this? Why don't I own this? Milkshake. V for Vendetta. Princess. No, why? Not the Princess Bride. No, stop buying stupid shit.
Talk about that.
Notorious. Notorious
Hitchcock,
B.I.G.
Hitchcock. Hitchcock.
Oh, you're right. It is a Hitchcockian. Pulp Fiction. You can go see that in theater instead. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Apropos of this episode.
Yeah.
The Bourne Legacy. The Crow. He's dead. Dark Knight Rises.
He's dead.
Inception. Indiana Jones. A Complete Adventure, including Plastic Skull.
Crystal Skull.
The Plastic Skull.
Melanine Skull.
It looked like a plastic skull. And there's a ridiculous scene involving Indy and a fucking... refrigerator.
Nuclear bomb.
Ridiculous. Jurassic Park, the ultimate trilogy. Not going to say Just Friends.
Okay.
Not going to say Kill Bill.
Good thing you didn't say
I am going to say Love Actually. Hell to the S. Martyrs, hell to the S. You know what's hell to the no, though? The Tall Man. Don't watch his follow-up, that French director's follow-up to Martyrs. Tall Man, it's streaming on Netflix. I do not recommend. I did write it up on AndersCow.com, though. Moonrise Kingdom. I got to fucking see that. What's wrong with me? God damn it, I got to see that. Devil's Playground. Hell yes. Smart move. That's all about the Amish. Duel. Smart. Easy A. Even smarter. I got a pocket full of sunshine. Finding Nemo. Smart. Get the Gringo. Even smarter. Not going to say Ghostbusters.
Good.
Bill and Ted's Most Excellent. Hell to the yes. Not going to say Bond 50. Boogie Nights.
Bond 50 is the
Brave.
Box set. Thank you for buying that box.
Brave.
I recommended it to
Chronicle.
You.
And Ted. You know, one of the funniest scenes all year long, got to admit, was the whore name scene. Pretty hilarious.
I
and Ted.
That.
Very funny. And Too Hip by Rapper Girls.
I don't know why you're
X,
reading that.
6X Stripe. I don't know what that means, but some good choices again this week.
Thanks,
guys.
You guys, for doing all your Xmas shopping, your Hanukkah shopping, your everything shopping through us. We appreciate it.
If you're going to say Xmas, why don't you also butcher the Jewish version, which is Chanukah?
Oh, is it Chanukah?
Why don't you say Christmas and Hanukkah or Xmas and Chanukah?
Okay, Chanukah.
Okay. Let's equally offend everyone and say Quinza.
Can do. Mm-hmm. Thanks, you guys. Back to the show. Hey, it's Rip Torn. You're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com. Yep. Welcome back. Thanks, Metric. Yeah, Metric. That's right. Ontario, Canada's own Metric. You may have heard of them. They're at ilovemetric.com. The album is Synthetica. Logan, explain who Metric is, because they're a real band. They've been around for years.
All our bands are real bands.
Yeah, but these guys are like on a major label.
People that have seen Scott Pilgrim vs. the World would know them as Scott Pilgrim's ex-girlfriend, Envy Adams' band.
Yeah.
Envy Adams' band.
Envy Adams' band. And fucking what's his face? Brandon Routh. Routh.
Language.
Routh. We'll be doing a cool, we're doing a cool promotion involving Metric. You want
who's we?
I'll do it in the next.
Like I'm involved.
I'll do it in the next.
Involved?
No, we are doing it. I'll do it in the next.
I'm involved.
I'll
in
explain
this.
The next segment.
We
you
can.
The
film
we're giving away Metric CDs.
Oh, we are.
Yeah, we're giving away the album.
Get past things.
We're giving away the album Synthetica.
We are.
Okay, are you familiar? You can tone it down a little bit. Are you familiar with? Have I told you or have you caught wind that I was given a car for a week, free car?
I don't like this conversation.
Okay, well, then we can stop right now.
Okay, you got a car?
I was given a car for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Acura.
A Silverado?
No, Acura gave me a car. It's out in the parking lot right now. Acura
really?
Gave me an ILX.
They lent you a car for a week?
They gave me a car for a week, and they want me to like blog about it. They give it to bloggers, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I'm not really a blogger. I tweet a lot, but I don't really blog. Mm-hmm. I host podcasts. And they're like, that's fine, just, you know.
How much paperwork did you have to sign?
Not that much, surprisingly. I just give a lot of information. Like, I had to copy my ID and stuff.
You want to get loaded and race home?
Again?
Would that be bad for the
it'd be bad.
Promotion?
Yeah.
Anything were to happen?
I was Logan and I actually made a video posted to YouTube. Logan, why don't you post it on today's episode?
This is vaguely vaguely related to movies, just because you shot a little video.
You made a little
of it,
movie,
but
that's right. And
not
Logan
really
edited it.
For my taste.
Logan shot and edited it, so you can see his visual style.
There's some movie references.
His
in there.
Auteurism. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. On AndersonandBrian.com. They sent over some CDs because they're doing a partnership with Metric, and you can get a copy of Metric's album, and we'll explain how.
A lot of cross promoting going on. This feels like huge group sex.
Bottom line is, if you're
they're
listening to the show, you have the opportunity to get free CDs or free albums.
Are you promoting Acura?
Nothing in it for you.
On this program?
Was
that part of the deal they made?
Oh, we're now corporate shills. I signed you up, too. We're now corporate shills for Acura.
I don't recall signing off on any kind of Acura dealings directly to you.
You're going to be getting an Acura. Mm-hmm. You have to pay for it.
Good news to all the listeners. During the break, I found my Gone Baby Gone notes, and I left off a couple things.
Oh, thank God.
I said Freeman was terribly distracting. A twitching dead guy's mouth was also exceptionally distracting, which I saw three or four times. So,
really?
And I'm not nitpicking just because it's Affleck. At the time, it was exceptionally distracting and upsetting that his mouth continued to twitch when he was supposed to be dead. And then also, ultimately, it felt like a Clint Eastwood movie from about 5-6 years ago. Not necessarily a Clint Eastwood starring vehicle movie, but a directed Clint Eastwood, a Clint Eastwood directed movie.
Have you seen Argo?
Couldn't you see him directing?
Yes, absolutely.
Same with Argo. A little bit like Clint Eastwood style.
I have not seen Argo.
Movie.
I want you to rank Argo.
No, not
the
really
town,
at all.
And I want you to rank
Argo. Not at all.
Gone Baby Gone. Rank.
I can't. They're all different movies.
Rank.
But they're all very you know solid Bs. They're all solid B movies.
I like The Town better than like Gone Baby Gone. Significantly better.
Argo would have been clearly atop the list had it not been for the ridiculous Hollywood last 20 minutes.
Okay.
15 minutes.
Fair enough.
Upsetting, Brian. It was like, well, yeah, you got something really good going here. Why would you do that? Why would you spit in my face? You're insulting me. Children putting together faces of strip
paper.
Come
on. No spoilers.
That doesn't give anything away. God damn it, though. Why do they got to do that?
Number 5 for me.
It's not quite enough tension here. Let's build some more. They won't notice that it's ridiculous. Build more tension.
Number 5 for you. Let's talk movies.
You want to start off?
Let's do this.
Top 5 American actors. Top 5 actors never nominated for an Oscar. American actor edition.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5 for me. You know, some actors are penalized, I think, in their career.
I like to say penalized.
Penalized for being too good looking. I think this happened to Alec Baldwin early in his career. Well, I know it happened to me early in my career. It happened to Alec Baldwin early in his career. Luckily, Alec Baldwin has transitioned into a nice supporting man role in his career and was nominated for an Oscar for The Cooler. I should have researched this, but I think he was nominated for a supporting actor for The Cooler. But he has been recognized, whereas number 5 for me, Val Kilmer, has gone... has gone unrecognized by the Academy for his excellence, and specifically The Doors, 1991, could have very easily, deservedly, got an Oscar nomination. Tombstone, 1993, only in retrospect do we enjoy this film more and more. And
I'd like to make a note that neither one of us said, I'll be your Huckleberry.
No.
I'll be your Huckleberry. Neither one of us. We both abstained.
That's right. And also, I would have not been surprised or upset to see him get a supporting actor nomination for Heat in 1995.
Huckleberry or Huckleberry?
For Heat, he was nominated for a Saturn Award for Best Actor. Yeah, probably a victim of being, honestly, too good-looking on his career. Critics never really took him seriously, especially because he would sprinkle these great performances among lesser ones, like Willow and Top Gun and the fucking Batman movies. Admittedly, fun movies, but pretty lightweight.
Let's not think. Let's not forget Bad Lieutenant.
He was in Bad Lieutenant?
Yeah. He didn't really do much. He was an ancillary character. Front and back. He kind of disappeared from the middle.
And also, I don't think it helped his career that he established himself early. His first couple of roles were comedic roles. He was Top Secret and Real Genius. Mm-hmm. And I think that handicaps you and takes a real hell of an actor to overcome that like a Sean Penn type. And Val Kilmer, very good actor, would have liked to have seen him. There's still time. But the window is closing for Val Kilmer.
Just to confirm your little notion there, Brian, yes, Alec Baldwin nominated for Best Supporting Actor in The Cooler at the 2004 Academy Awards.
Good for him. Val, I fear the window is closing for Val.
You fear it?
I fear.
I read an interview with him and Chuck Klosterman. I interviewed him in Chuck Klosterman 4.
Close Klosterman.
You can call him whatever you like. And it's a collection of essays from various magazine articles. It's not his best book, but not bad. Some good stuff. And one of the interviews was with Val Kilmer. And I remember thinking, he's so douchey, over the top with his beliefs in himself that he comes back around full circle and I like him again.
Okay.
Full 180. Because he's sitting there talking to Klosterman about how...
Post-Klosterman.
Val Kilmer I'm talking about now. Okay. Klister. And went out and talked to him on his ranch out in Montana or whatever. He lives out by himself on a big ranch in Montana. And he was talking, I don't think he has any kids, Mr. Val, but he was talking about how he has played fathers who have dying children or children that have died. And he understands what it is to be like, to be a bereaved father and have a child who has lost better than a father who actually lost a child.
It's fucking brazen.
And he's 100% serious as he's saying these things.
Hey, good
Chucky.
For him.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, I was shuddering as I was reading this. I was reading it at camp, actually, in a room filled with sleeping cancer kids, ironically. And I remember I was really angry. By the time I was done with the interview, I'm like,
you were moved.
You know what? Big balls on him. Good for him to be able to have that kind of denial. Bring walking
Val
through
Kilmer,
life.
My number five American actor who has never been nominated for an Oscar.
Number five for me. I'm starting big too, Brad.
Yeah.
With a name that a lot of people
big
have probably
Val
heard.
Big like Val Kilmer's pulling on weight. Is that what you're saying?
I like to start off with a little less known trivia fact.
Ooh.
About my actor.
Right.
His father was seventh cousin of President Richard Nixon, Brian. And he's from Philadelphia.
He's a young actor.
He was first noticed in a movie called Footloose, Brian. Also, you may know him from Apollo 13, Sleepers, Hollow Man, Mystic River.
Oh.
But it's Murder in the First as a Henry Young. Action. Reaction.
This is Christian Slater?
Reaction. I'm talking about Kevin Bacon.
Oh, Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon is very underrated. Kind of similar for perhaps the same kind of good boyish looks, because we all know him as Footloose. And I know just recently I stopped thinking of him as Footloose guy, and more, when I say recently, the last 10 years, but more as like the not only a good actor, but also a very good bad guy, as he proved in Hollow Man.
He had to kind of break free of the whole generic bad guy du jour. You know what I mean? That was his career there for about 7 or 8 years, and he's broken free a little bit. Good for you.
But Murder in the First, I want to say 96. I have everything else written down, so I don't have this.
This one.
Murder in the First, 1995. Hey, look at that. So in 96, he definitely should have been, and I think if Murder in the First comes out today,
yep,
and he does what he does with his body of work now, and he's being taken seriously, he wins, or at least he's for sure nominated. Here's who was nominated that year.
Ooh, I should have done this.
Sean Penn.
That's smart.
Sean Penn for Dead Man Walking.
God damn it.
Easy.
I should have done this.
Massimo Troisi.
Who?
For Il Postino, which may be the dullest movie you'll ever see, but he died shortly after that movie was released.
Oh, that's right. It was posthumous.
So everyone's like, oh, we're not on the
almighty. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Some of the best Foley work I've ever heard, though. I can say that about Il Postino. God damn, the sounds are solid.
Okay.
Solid sounds in that movie. Holy shit.
Foley artist deserves a raise.
Fucking dude riding his bike around delivering mail. I'm not supposed to care.
He deserves a few more lira.
Nixon.
Get it? It's Italian.
Anthony Hopkins. I don't get it at all. I'm not listening to you. Nixon, Anthony Hopkins was nominated for Nixon for Best Actor.
Ironic, Nixon.
And Mr. Holland's Opus, Richard Dreyfuss, nominated for Mr. Holland's Opus, which I used to wander around and tell people, oh, I like that Mr. Holland's Opus. Watched the second half of it the other day. Holy shit,
film.
It's awful. Terrible.
That's a pretty bad movie.
But you know what? I saw the second half, and the first half was the part with Terrence Howard, which I still will stand up and say I like that part. I like Terrence Howard a lot.
He's a little kid in that, right?
Yeah, he's great in that.
I love the
beautiful
movie.
Black man with green eyes.
I love the movie where the old white guy
The Black Benicio del Toro.
I love the movie where the old white guy teaches the young black kid about rhythm.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of ironic, I guess.
It's kind of ridiculous.
But Richard Dreyfuss.
Here's how you drum.
Richard Dreyfuss was
Reggie, whatever his name is, Tyrone.
The Scurbs or whatever your name is, calling Brian smug.
That's right.
Brian's got nothing on Richard fucking Dreyfuss,
oh my
especially
God.
Mr. Holland's Opus. Holy shit. But all that being said, it was a Mr. Nicolas Cage who won Best Actor for Leaving Las Vegas, which I still think is one of the more overrated roles.
Really?
I love Nicolas Cage,
no.
And I know he can tie one on, apropos to what I'm saying. This role, I mean, he's done some great, great stuff, and he was just kind of the drunk yelling guy in this movie. I feel like I could have done that. When you think of Leaving Las Vegas, what do you think of? What's the image that conjures into your mind?
Nick Cage doing his Anderson Cowan impression.
Wrong. No, it's everyone. I think that I'm not alone. Him walking down the aisle.
Yeah,
and filling,
which is the very beginning
of the movie.
Yep.
And it's like he won it right there or something.
That and the sexy scene where he's drinking booze off her boobs.
If you have not seen Murder in the First.
And butt raping.
Oh, you know what? When I was doing my research, Fuckflix went down.
Ah.
Not a very convenient time. It did go down when I was doing my research. But so I cannot tell you if Murder in the First is available on the old streaming, but I'll do that as Brian tells me his next.
Logan can do it. Is he counting? Are you counting?
No, I don't. Logan's trying to creep back up to 15%. I want to keep him down at 14.
I don't know if I like that.
You know, he comes in here every single night and has me do his job. Every single night.
Is
the first
true?
Thing he does is he gives me a thumb drive and has me burn him a disc.
Wow.
And
You'd think a producer would produce the disc.
Weird. It's very odd.
It's odd.
Maybe if I went up to 20%, I can afford a CD burner.
I don't know about this. I don't know where this is at.
I don't like it at all.
I don't like
Move.
Where this is at. Number four for me.
50%. 20% of nothing is still nothing.
Number four. The number four American actor never nominated for an Oscar. I think you're going to be down with this one, Anderson.
Yo, I'm down, yo.
Vincent D'Onofrio. Vinny D.
Good one.
Full Metal Jacket was his big coming out party in 1987. But I will give a he won a Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actor for Men in Black in 1997. And while not a very heavy film, definitely a lightweight film, he was fantastic. He was a Carl Suit. He was an alien living inside of a human, and he was one of the highlights of the film. Edgar. Oh, you're right. Edgar Suit. He's wearing an Edgar suit.
Maybe one of the most underrated performances ever. I mean, I even do it. Like, I think, oh, yeah, people talk about Men in Black. I'm like, yeah, Vincent D'Onofrio's character was great in that. And then you go back and you watch footage of it, and you're like, holy shit, it's great.
Yep.
And he came up with all that shit on his own. They had to do a ton of makeup, but all of his gesticulations.
That's right. Wild gesticulations.
Yeah. Yep.
And the manner of speaking.
Facial expressions.
He had a very odd manner of speaking.
Yeah.
Yes, and also The Cell in 2000. We could have easily snuck in there. Right, directed by Torsum. Yes, criminally ignored for... I will use criminally in this one for Full Metal Jacket. And I was thinking about it, Anderson. What do you think about this? Maybe...
I don't like it.
Why do you think he was ignored for a... This is a real snub for a supporting actor Oscar nomination for Full Metal Jacket. I have a theory. It's a three-part theory.
Go ahead.
Number one, he was a relative unknown.
That's a very good point. That's probably the main point.
Number two, he was being overshadowed by Arlie Ermey. All their scenes are together. They're never seen apart from each other.
Another very valid point. And plus, go ahead. You got more points.
And how can you not be... D'Onofrio, as Private Pyle, is essentially the straight man to Arlie Ermey. Arlie Ermey has all the funny lines, all the juicy lines. He chews up scenery, and you can't help but be overshadowed by someone.
Arlie Ermey, for those of you who may be a little lost at this point, the drill instructor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And actually, he was hired by Kubrick to be the advisor on the show, because he actually was a real life Marines, I believe, drill instructor.
He was,
and he was the advisor to the actual actor who was playing that part. And Kubrick's like, you know what, you do it so much better than the actor. Why don't we just make you the actor?
Yeah,
and he gave him a SAG card right, and we got it right in there.
And now he you still see him on TV and stuff. He's probably been in 100 movies,
still milking that role.
That's right. He's still Arlie Ermey. And also, how about the third?
He likes to threaten skull fucking.
I will skull fuck you. How about this third part to this? This is interesting. Do you think maybe there was a little bit of Vietnam fatigue amongst
the platoon,
Oscar?
The year before?
Platoon, Apocalypse Now. Like, the big directors had come out with big movies, and Platoon had swept the Oscars the year before. There was a little bit of Vietnam fatigue?
Yes, I do. And I think also the movie as a whole was just... I never quite understood why it was two movies in one.
Yeah.
I never quite understood, because after the first half, we don't see Gomer Pyle anymore. It's a completely separate movie.
Well,
it's the same subject
reasons.
And same characters cross over, Brian. But you just love to tantalize. You just love to dance around that spoil.
That's right.
That ruiner.
That's right.
But I think more than anything else, it was that he was a newcomer. But yeah, I think that the Vietnam hangover for sure. I mean, Kubrick wasn't even nominated for Best Director for this role. It wasn't up for Best Picture. It got one nomination. That was, I think, Best Screenplay.
I thought about it, and it made me think about, remember in True Romance where Christian Slater's character, Clarence Worley, he says to the Joel Silver character, like, I loved your work on Coming Home in a Body Bag. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's satirizing the whole Vietnam thing. I feel like there may have been a little Vietnam fatigue.
Ooh, Val Kilmer. It's in True Romance, too. Look at that.
He has a very small part. Uncredited.
Background part.
Uncredited.
Always soft. Uncredited. Shot for 2 days.
That's
always
right.
Soft focus.
That's right.
Like deconstructing Harry.
Number four for you.
Number four for me. Murder in the First is not available on streaming for Fuckflix, but I do highly recommend that movie. It's a prison movie.
Prison.
I believe it came up in my top five prison movies that we did way back when. Oh, yeah. I also did best actor in a supporting role for that year, but we don't need to do that. Wait, we might. Wait, where am I? What's going on?
Number four.
Number four. Everything's fucked.
Oh,
everything is falling apart. Where is all my stuff?
Oh, my God.
I know who my number four is, but I don't have it written down. This is awful.
It's there somewhere.
This is terrible.
It's there somewhere.
I don't have my number three either.
I promise. Oh,
holy
Jesus.
Holy shit.
Logan, get control of this guy.
This is what happens when newscasters lose their teleprompter. It's just fucking all out war.
That's right. Did you ever see the SNL sketch with David Allen Greer and Will Ferrell?
They flip over the desk.
The weatherman is dead.
They're wearing their ties as like headbands.
The order of the hand shall rule. That's a great sketch.
Number four for me. Going to the computer. Going big again, Brian.
Yeah.
This guy named Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah.
I love... Oh, I didn't do my little trivia.
Oh,
studied
shit.
Political science at Amherst College in Massachusetts.
Oh, Jeffrey Wright.
That's the same school as Dr. Drew went to.
Yeah, fighting Amherst. Fighting Lord Jeffs.
Funny.
Fighting Lord Jeffs.
He is known for his roles in Lady in the Water, Broken Flowers, Syriana.
You led with Lady in the Water?
I like that movie a lot, Brian.
Yeah, I don't know if he's known for his role in Lady in the Water.
By me,
Wright is known, but not for that.
Okay, we'll settle down.
Okay.
I like Lady in the Water. I think a lot of people like you going with the preconceived
notion. I'm just saying.
It was made by an M. Night guy.
Okay,
fuck
I'm just
him.
Saying.
Good movie. Great, solid character.
Jeffrey
funny.
Wright, if you're describing
I'm
Jeffrey Wright
I'm going down
somebody,
a list, sir.
You don't
there
start.
There is a list.
You don't start with Lady in the Water.
Please tell me how. You know what? Maybe you can research with me next week, and you can sit down, and you can help me along.
Jeffrey Wright's known for a high school play he did.
He is known for these movies: Lady in the Water, Broken Flowers, Syriana. He plays Colin Powell.
I would lead with Colin Powell
in W.
Black Hawk Down.
He plays. He's not in that.
Oh, it's another black guy.
God damn you! You don't even know who he is.
Yeah, I do. He's in Casino Royale.
He plays Senator Thompson in Ides of March, and most recently he's Felix Leiter.
Lighter.
In 007.
Yeah.
The last three 007s.
Yeah.
He's been Felix, first African-American to ever be Felix. Yes, he's good in all those. Not any really major giant roles there. However, he probably could have, should have, maybe would have been up for best supporting as Colin Powell. I thought he was good as Colin Powell. But it's the role of Basquiat, which I love, love, love. I know a lot of you guys give me shit and call me a hipster, but I think that's a beautiful, fantastic fucking movie, Basquiat, 1996. And we'll watch him go from that, directed by Julian Schnabel, to move on to Ride with the Devil, which I brought up a number of times on this here program.
Julian Schnabel directed Diving Bell and the Butterfly?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And also Basquiat. He was first an artist, Brian. Yeah, okay. But moving on to Ride with the Devil, which is an Ang Lee film. It's a Civil War movie. And it's got its challenging moments. Jewel is in it. That's a challenge.
Are her boobs in it?
Tobey Maguire is in it. Another challenge.
Are her boobs in it?
But here's what we got
breasts
going. Brian, yes. They're attached to her. She's in the movie. And they're attached. No, her nipples are not flinging about Mr. Skin. God damn you. Can I talk about
my question?
Yes, her breasts are in the movie, Brian.
But are they in the movie?
They're not on the movie. All right. Ride with the Devil. It was a very good movie. And Jeffrey Wright plays a slave, Brian. Get this. A slave. And apparently this happened quite a bit. And I've never seen this in any Civil War movie.
What's that?
A slave fighting for the Confederates.
For the Confederates.
And it happened. It happened because their horrible slave owner fucks would say, hey, fight with us. If we win, I'll let you go free. And
really?
He is unrecognizable, especially when you go from Basquiat to... what was his name? Daniel Holt in Ride with the Devil. I recommend this Ride with the Devil.
I don't think I knew that.
It's a good movie, and I think that it's his character that really took me over the top. And actually, I interviewed him for the role that he played in this. I got to interview him, and kind of a dick.
Aww.
Maybe he was having a bad day,
but
not,
it was
a junket, not
a
real,
though, right?
Not a real friendly guy.
It was a
junket,
though, right?
But yeah.
I can see how that would make someone a dick.
Yeah, you shouldn't be a dick to me, though. I was all like young and squirrely and like happy.
Excited to be there.
Excited to be there. Not really, but yeah. Maybe I was when I pulled out my Basquiat poster. Would you sign this, Mr. Wright? Joking. But, yeah, Jeffrey Wright, number four. And you know what? This is a funny one because it's not like the Academy, other than the Colin Powell one, and you know, Basquiat, he was too unknown and too new. He does Basquiat today. I bet he gets recognition. At least there's talks of it.
Yeah.
But he's the kind of guy that either he's not getting the roles, which I think is probably part of the problem, maybe because he is kind of a dick. Or he's not taking the roles, kind of like you said, D'Onofrio, because he likes to take more odd roles, much like Christopher Walken. He likes to take odd, funky roles. He likes to take roles that are more of a challenge.
Right.
I don't know if there's many leading man roles types for a guy like Jeffrey Wright, though.
Sure.
So it's a shame, because he is one of our greatest actors. He is phenomenal, and he's a chameleon.
He's good.
I hope to see him get recognition one day. And then I could say I met him, and I had him sign my Basquiat poster.
He's a dick to me.
He was addicted to me.
Number three for me.
I should call you Rabbit.
Number three.
Go ahead.
I know you're a fan, so I'll just say very quickly. Sam Rockwell.
Who's that?
Sam Rockwell.
Sammy Rock.
Sam Rockwell.
Almost made my list, didn't I?
He's an actor. Oh, I'm glad I talked about him then. For some reason, I had in my mind that he was nominated for an Oscar for The Green Mile in 1999. Not the case.
He would be today, though. Another one of those things where like he was too fresh, too green, too new. That's where I first saw him, and I immediately fell in love. He's hit that sweet spot for bad guy so perfectly. You don't see it very often, but a really, really good bad guy can make a movie a full star better, a full grade better, and he did that for Green Mile.
He's the best part of the film.
By far, and horrible, horrible fuck, awful, awful character, filth of the world,
yep.
But just lovable.
And
you want more of him.
Exactly. You want to see more of him. I totally
agree. And it's
hard
to do that.
Yes, he was actually nominated for a SAG Award for the entire cast for The Green Mile. Also, nominated for a lot of awards, won a lot of awards for Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, 2002, Best Actor at the Berlin International Film Festival, nominated for a Satellite Award. Also, nominated for a Satellite Award for the Matchstick Men.
For a lot of things.
Matchstick Men. And nominated for a ton of awards for Moon.
Well,
and that would have been a very deserving Oscar.
Yeah,
very
did you look up what won that year? Well, who was up that year?
I did. I should have. It's 2009. He was nominated for Best Actor, the British Independent Film Awards, and the Saturn Awards.
And you could say Choke, too. However, Choke didn't do it for me, and he didn't do it for me. It was actually kind of a huge shame that he didn't really
Moon's
pull
one
his
of the films, one of, I would say, of the top 5 or 10 films that you've made me watch or encouraged me to watch, or I found out through this show, I enjoyed Moon one of the most. I really love Moon.
Passive
really
aggressive how you say you found out through the show when I am the part of
no,
the
I'm
show.
No, I feel like it may have come up in a listener top like five for limited storytelling. Maybe you talked about it. But I'm saying, however I found out about it, I'm glad I did.
It came up on the show, Brian, when I flickfest it, when I saw it the week it came out, because I had a giant erection for this movie.
Came out 2009.
I don't know why I would
have
to say it
that
way.
So.
I don't know why I would have to say it that way. What's that?
You know what? Okay.
Wait, when did it come out?
I'm going to call you a dick because you probably flickfest it with fucking Carano and you thought it was me because I was suffering from a fucking brain tumor.
Uh-huh.
2009.
Gertie.
This is a tough year for me. I had cancer. Number three for you.
It's uncomfortable.
Number three.
Where were we? What was I talking about? I was
You were feeling bad about yourself.
Jeff Rockwell. Sam Rockwell.
You're feeling bad about what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Number three.
Jeff Rockwell.
Jeffrey Rockwell.
Jeffrey Wright.
Rockwell the singer.
Number three for me.
Somebody's watching him.
Not on my... I don't know why I didn't print. I feel like there's something that printed in the boss's...
Heck, man?
The boss's office. Here we go. I'm just going straight off the computer. Here we go. This actor, Brian, was adopted when 6 months old.
Okay.
He worked in a cemetery for a while when he was at college.
Okay.
Any ideas?
So far, it's just what I can read off your screen.
Ray Liotta.
Just what I can read off your screen.
Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta.
You know
I
what?
Just saw Blow yesterday.
This
I watched
is a
Blow again.
Strong, strong American actor.
Yeah.
He was in Something Wild. Not on Fuckflix, which is very upsetting. 1986 movie, a forgotten film. Narc. He was fucking great in Narc. Identity. I don't know why, but I saw it twice in the theater. A little guilty pleasure.
Enjoyable.
There.
Yeah, guilty pleasure.
Hilarious. Right. Hilarious. And I say nomination worthy in Hannibal. He was the funniest part of that
movie. I
don't
movie. Think it was meant to be funny, but
he was
funny.
It was meant to be funny.
You think it was?
David Mamet came out and admitted that he was brought in to pump up that script
punch
and
it
give it a punch it up with a little humor.
All right.
And it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Watching Ray Liotta do what he does to himself, in a sense, at the end of that movie is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Great as a nice guy in Field of Dreams. Who could forget Dumbo Drop? Me! But I wrote it down, so I didn't. And most recently, Killing Them Softly, which he's right back to his old self, and he's fantastic. One of the strong points of that otherwise somewhat forgettable movie, Killing Them Softly, Ray Liotta, was very good. And if you hate him, definitely go check out Killing Them Softly. I mean, one of the most, I mean, we see a lot of beatings on screen. This is one of the most realistic beatings you're ever going to see. Hard to watch. But,
yeah.
Brian, I'd be... Obviously, Fool,
remiss.
Not to mention.
Remiss.
Remiss, not to mention Goodfellas.
Yeah.
As Henry Hill. Karen! Karen!
Karen!
You know who goes to jail? No, don't, Brian. Stop it.
I know who goes to jail.
Who goes to jail, Brian?
I forget. What is the line?
It's N or stick-up men. And you know why? Because they fall asleep behind behind the wheel of the getaway car.
Makes me uncomfortable when you say that.
N or. Mm-hmm. But he definitely, possibly should have been at least nominated for Best Supporting. Because he was Henry Hill, who was the lead character.
He was the
in this
absolute
movie.
Lead. There was no supporting.
Best actor role in a leading role that year. Here's who was up. Richard Harris in The Field.
Okay.
No
Gerard Depardieu whatsoever.
And Cyrano de Bergerac. Cyrano de Bergerac.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Cyrano.
Cyrano.
Cyrano. I'm a bad reader.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Cyrano de de Bergerac.
Okay. But as Cyrano or the movie was Cyrano?
That was the movie, Barbara.
Okay.
Robert De Niro in Awakenings.
Okay.
Kevin Costner in Dancing with Wolves. And the winner was Jeremy Irons in Reversal of Fortune.
Yeah, that was a good movie, actually.
Mm-hmm. I remember becoming enraged at that moment because I wanted De Niro to win so badly.
Oh, yeah.
And then Best Supporting Role, which is probably what he more likely should have been up for as Hank Hill.
Really?
Yeah.
Who was the lead?
Jimmy.
No, false.
Right. That's,
okay, anyway, carry
you
on.
You can totally go back and forth on that. Like, there was a... Oh, Pulp Fiction.
He narrates the film.
Listen to me. Pulp Fiction.
Samuel
Jackson has more speaking parts and more screen time.
Oh, he's the lead, for sure.
Than Vincent.
Right.
Then John Travolta.
Ensemble.
John Travolta is up for Best Actor.
Yeah.
Samuel
racist,
L. Rockwell.
That's racist.
Samuel Lawrence That's Rockwell. I'm truly forgetting his
Sam
name.
Sam Jackson.
Sam Jackson is up for Best Supporting
sure.
Actor. So they can
That's
fuck
racist.
With that quite a bit.
That's
you
racist.
Could easily have put it was an ensemble cast. I'm talking Goodfellas.
Sure.
Hank Hill, a character of Hank Hill, could have definitely been up.
Who's
probably
up
should have been up
year.
For Best Supporting that year.
Robin Williams for Rick
This is embarrassing. This is embarrassing. I don't know who has submitted themselves to Dick Tracy. I remember I had to, and I was sorely disappointed. But Al Pacino was up for Dick Tracy.
Yeah. Big Boy Caprice.
Awful. It's a movie you would have liked probably as a kid.
I
you
did
probably
love
did.
It. I loved it as a kid.
Oh, God, I can see that. Graham Greene for Dance with Wolves. Uh-huh. Godfather Part 3 had Andy Garcia.
Wow.
The fact that that movie would even
Think
be
about that.
Mentioned.
That was up for Best Picture that year.
Bruce Davison, a longtime companion. And you know what? It makes it, you can swallow it a little bit because the winner that year was Joe Pesci for Goodfellas.
Oh, yeah.
That's Tommy.
That's
Tommy. But, yeah, come on.
Wasn't
Leota?
His acceptance speech just like, thanks? Mm. It was something like, thanks.
Yeah, because he was so bummed that, the Goodfellas was getting tromped
That's
by
right.
Dance with Fucks. Dance right. with Whores. That movie, Dancing with Wolves, I was so angry. Not a terrible movie, just not a great movie. But I hated wolves for a couple of years.
Oh, you're that upset about
yeah.
it? Yeah. It's understandable.
Every time I'd see a wolf, I'd say, fuck wolves.
Coming up next!
You know, I used to fall asleep to the sound of wolves. You know, they have those CDs of wolves howling. And I wanted to be the cool guy.
It was
like,
that upsetting.
Yeah, man, I go to sleep. You know, I swear to God, I was trying to do this. I pop in the CD, and I'm like, gee, I just, you know, I can't go to sleep unless I like, hear the sounds of the wild. And I tried it. I put it in right. I'm not kidding you. Like 20 minutes in, I was fucking so, I'm like a 19-year-old kid at this point, so terrified, goosebumps. And I was scared to get out of my bed to turn it off because it
wow.
had me so freaked out.
Are you trying to condition yourself in case you got like stranded?
I wanted
in the
to
desert?
Be a cool guy who could be like, yeah, like, you know, a girl comes over. I'm like, sorry, honey, I can't get to sleep.
Were they
put
snarling
the sound
wolves?
Of wolves? No, it was just like howling wolves. And then you could hear a little, like, every now and again, they get
a
some
rustle.
Meat or something.
Wow.
Yeah, but I remember like, something primal inside me woke up and I was fucking petrified.
There's something, there's got to be something instinctive in our DNA. There's got to be something instinctive
Three
in
times,
our, in
not
our,
the term.
That's the fourth time. There's going to be something instinctive in us that there's a fear mechanism whenever you hear a wolf howl.
How douchey is that, though? That was
trying, her evolution.
I was like, dude, I just, you know, I need to go to sleep to wolves, man. That's just how I sleep, bro.
Wow.
it went terribly awry the first night.
I would say it's part of evolution, but it's the way God made us perfectly.
Stop
Coming
it,
up next,
bro.
The conclusion of top five American actors never nominated for an Oscar.
Really good.
Bitch.
We're always looking for crunchy grooves. To
you
quote
especially.
My buddy Petros Papadakis, he
you,
likes to
yes.
say crunchy grooves.
That's right. You're always on the lookout. You're on the prowl.
Yes.
Crunchy grooves.
And you know what? The goddamn studio record execs got us down. We're not allowed to just play anything we want, Brian.
That's right.
So we need the listeners' help. So if you have not signed on to a major label, or if your label is free-spirited and willing to let you try and branch
or
out.
Or if you have control over your music.
Yeah, either or. How about you send it over to Logan's Way?
And join the heritage of the feature artists on the film.
Mm-hmm.
We have
We've
some
had
great ones.
Everything from music that I absolutely love, that sounded just like Snot a few weeks ago, to saxophone playing Fuck from USC.
He didn't go to USC.
He was awful.
Ah. Oh.
But we would love to have you be a part of this here program. We'll give you nice ample plugs.
That's right.
Get your name out there because it's tough. It's not tough.
And you get your music heard by literally dozens of people.
And then when you look to your girl and you say, the band's going to make it, you can play her our podcast and have some proof.
That's right. So please send a Logan and on with the show. Yeah, welcome back. Thanks again, Metric. Like they need our help. Metric album, Synthetica, and you can win Synthetica. And how do they do it? What are they going to do, Logan? What are they going to do to win Synthetica? It's very easy, right?
Well,
we're giving this away
Friday morning when the show is available to download.
That's right.
Which is right now. You can go on our Facebook page or Twitter account, mm-hmm. facebook.com/thefilmvault or @thefilmvault. And either share or retweet the post about this episode.
That's it. Just get it out there. Help us spread the word. Do a little retweet or a little sharing on Facebook. And we're going to enter you into a chance to win the CD. And it's easy as that. We'll send it to you. It'll be fantastic. You'll enjoy it. And thanks.
All right. All right. I don't know what's going on right now.
We're giving shit away.
I did not sign
like
off.
Like a real show.
On this. Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like real shows. That's why I try not to work in them.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Real shows are for the birds.
For the birds.
Yeah.
Number two.
I feel like they're getting more play than our normal artists. I feel like they need it. Yeah. You know what this is equivalent to? This is like the one band who doesn't really need the help. And it's equivalent to Dr. Drew or Adam Carolla or many other people that I know of that this happens to getting pulled over for speeding tickets. And the cop sees that they're a rich, famous person. They say, oh, go ahead. Then they pull over a Mexican 20 minutes later who in a beat-up car that's not paid off. And say, here's your $400 ticket.
Well, I just like listening to Metric.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you can put it in queue and enjoy yourself.
Number two. Number two for me. I feel much more strongly or much more confident in this pick after seeing...
I thought you were an English major. Much more strongly?
Much more strongly, actually, is correct.
Much more strongly?
Much stronger would be better. But I'm going to say I feel much more confident in this pick after
seeing... Much more gooder confidence?
After seeing Barton Fink. John Turturro!
Oh, almost John made my
Turturro,
list. Brian,
number two.
We could have had so much crossover.
So much crossover.
Thank God. I made smart decisions.
John Turturro, number two. I had in my mind that he was nominated for an Oscar for both Barton Fink and Do the Right Thing, 1989, but that didn't happen. He was in Barton Fink and won the Cannes Award for Best Actor. He won Cannes that year, for God's sake.
Cannes.
Nominated for the Chicago Film Critics Association Best Actor Award. Mm-hmm. And he was also fantastic in Quiz Show. And he was honored with a nomination for a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor, as well as a SAG Award for Best Supporting Actor. Also, O Brother, Where Art Thou? He was fantastic in. And what can you say about John Turturro? It's a borderline Gary Oldman situation when you're like, John Turturro's never been nominated for a fucking Oscar?
You know what?
I feel like his time will come.
One of my favorite roles is Ambrose.
What is Ambrose?
He plays Ambrose. It's TV Vault we're doing here now, but he plays Ambrose. Monk's brother on Monk. God, Tony Shalhoub's brother on Monk.
He was
Monk.
Great in Rounders,
Ambrose.
Too.
He's got agoraphobia.
Tony Shalhoub never nominated for an Oscar.
He doesn't leave the house. Well, he's not in enough. You know what? What's he doing?
He's
Big Night.
A handful of good things.
Big Night, and he gets his head blown off in Men in Black.
That's right.
Ooh, that stings.
Spoiler alert.
I didn't like it. Well, it grows back, so don't worry about it.
Spoiler alert!
But, Turturro's one of our fine, fine actors, and you know that he's probably going to get nominated
his
here with the Coen Brother movie eventually. You know what? Maybe it's when they make Old Fink, because they've been talking about making Old Fink the sequel to Barton Fink. They're just waiting for him to grow into the role.
They're still saying it's like 10 years away.
They're waiting for him to get old enough.
Yep.
Yeah. I can't wait for that Old Fink.
Old Fink.
Old Fink.
Most anticipated comeback, most anticipated sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kill Bill 3, Kill Bill Volume 3.
I should call you Rabbit.
Kill Bill.
All right. Number, what am I? Where
two,
am I?
Two,
number two,
two
for me. I'm going big here.
Hope.
I'm going big. And it seems like, you know what, I don't know if there's any hope in sight for this guy because he's old. You know what, I should also be noted.
Because he's old.
It is not lost on us that we are doing all very contemporary actors amongst us and working today. We could have easily gone back to dead actors or actors from yesteryear. However, that's not really in our wheelhouse. I don't think it's in most of our listeners' wheelhouse. And it doesn't really interest me to talk about actors who can no longer win. You know what I mean?
That is true. I also did what I think to be a fair amount of research, and a lot of the notable actors of the day had their time.
At least notable to us. And the ones that weren't nominated don't really get bandied about much.
They just stand the test of time.
Yeah.
I almost put Gene Wilder on my list.
What about George C. Scott getting nominated and winning? And Denise, he's the one who sent up the African American.
No,
American Indian is what I meant.
That was Marlon Brando.
They're the same person.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was both of them. They both.
I think George Scott
just
didn't show up.
He's famous for that.
That's right.
All right, number two for me. Is this number two for me?
Going big, you said.
Yeah, I'm going good. Big.
Hit me some trivia. Here we go.
236 acting credits, Bri.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is quite a few.
And he's old.
His left arm is 3 inches shorter than his right due to complications.
3 inches?
During his birth. And here's a third fun fact about this older actor, who I almost killed one day, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. That's another fun fact I just remembered. Almost killed him.
Almost killed by Anderson Cowan.
That's true. It's a true story. He has played American presidents 4 times, Bri. I won't go through all of them, but I will tell you who he is. His name is
Alan Alda.
Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen has never been nominated.
Wow.
Now he's kind of dropped out of the big picture
field. I was going to say, he hasn't done
field.
Too many movies.
In recent years. But he was in Catch-22. He was in The Believers, which still, I recall, I think about the spiders coming out of the cheek probably about once a week. I think of that, and I haven't seen it since the 80s.
He was in Badlands.
He was in Wall Street. Brian, it would be quiet.
Sorry.
Shut your mouth. He was in Wall Street, JFK, Catch Me If You Can, Very recently, he was in The Departed.
I'm surprised he didn't get caught up in The Departed thing. In the wave of support for The Departed, I'm surprised he didn't get caught up in that.
His role wasn't big enough.
It was for a supporting actor, but definitely enough of, it would,
you know, the fact that one, I don't even want to get into it. The fact that that one best, oh, I don't even want to get into it.
Well, it's
yeah, you're going to say it. Scorsese's best film, and I want to strike you, even though I know you're going to say.
Well, did any of his other films win Best Picture? No.
So ridiculous. I don't even know why we care about the Academy. You know what we should do is we should.
Of course,
see,
like, Apocalypse Now.
He didn't get nominated for an Academy Award. Who cares? Academy Awards are over.
That's right.
So over.
Apocalypse Now.
But anyways, the two roles that I wanted to talk about, but Brian's stepping all over me, per usual, are Apocalypse Now and Badlands. And apparently, I did some research
Printed Terry Malick's Badlands.
And here we go. Here are the roles that. Here are the movies that were up. Wait, he was also in. He played Greg Stiltson, a fictitious president, Brian, in The Dead Zone, 1983.
Really?
I like that movie, The Dead Zone. A fucking listener, whose name I will not mention, sent me a tweet about how they think that it's shtick when I say that. Like, oh, I love that movie. I love that Dead Zone. Mm. And now every time I do it, I catch myself, and it's annoying. It makes me self-conscious, which I don't fly.
I think they speak for the vocal minority.
Thank you, Brad.
Of one. Mm-hmm. I love it. Keep it up.
I love that.
I love you do that shtick.
I love that Dead Zone, Brad.
Is Denzel worth walking, Christopher Walken?
Yes, the ice is going to break. Yes. And then it was made into a TV show with Michael C. Hall. Michael
Sweet.
C. Hall? No, not Michael C. Hall. Yeah, Michael
J.
C.
Fox.
Hall. No, Michael C. I get them confused. Anthony Michael Hall. Michael C. Hall is Dexter, who wears a wig now because of cancer. Settle down.
Oh, he has hair back.
Settle down. It still looks like he's wearing a... you don't watch the show, so shut it. All right, 1973, the year that... That Martin Sheen could have been nominated for Best Actor as he played the role of Kit in Badlands, one of the most haunting movies you'll ever see. Such a good movie. God, I love that Badlands, Brian, 1973's Badlands. Here's who was up that year. It's a tough year, all right? Listen to this fucking lineup, 73, the golden era of cinema. Robert Redford was up for Best Actor in The Sting.
Never heard of him.
Al Pacino up for Serpico. Mm. Jack Nicholson, a guy named Jack Nicholson, was up for The Last Detail. Good movie, by the way.
Bunch of hacks so last far.
Marlon Brando in Last Tango in Paris, but who was...
Sir Laurence Olivier?
It was Jack Lemmon who won for Save the Tiger. So,
wow.
Stiff competition for a young Martin Sheen back in 73. However, you move forward
to How about Jack
years,
Lemmon pulling off the upset?
Apocalypse Now. For those of you who have seen Hearts of Darkness, you know that he almost killed himself in this role. Doing this role.
That's right.
He almost Heath Ledgered himself. And if those of you who have not seen Hearts of Darkness, what the fuck is wrong with you? Check that shit out.
That's a movie that would appeal to this listenership because these are people who want to know more about movies.
So good. George Hickenlooper's Hearts of Darkness. Very good. I think a lot of you have seen it. And it's probably on the DVD for Apocalypse Now. And I've stated on the show the reason why I don't like Apocalypse Now more is because the making of is better than the actual movie,
yeah.
Which is not its fault, but it is true. Here's who was up for Best Actor in a Leading Role, 1980, the year that Apocalypse Now came out. Peter Sellers in Being There, another very good movie. Hal Ashby. Movie,
Peter right? Sellers.
Peter Sellers. Roy Scheider in All That Jazz. Yeah. I think he could have been stricken from the record. He was good in that, but I think that Sheen might have deserved that. Al Pacino in Justice for All. Let's everyone settle down with Pacino, and I saw that in Justice for All. Overrated.
Okay.
Tell you that. Jack Lemmon in The China Syndrome. Very good. Love Jack Lemmon. Love that Jack Lemmon. The China Syndrome, a good little movie.
Right.
Very political piece, and that's why I think he was up. He's really good, but he could have definitely been up for supporting.
Produced by, what's-his-face, Michael Douglas.
What's-his-face did produce that. And then Dustin Hoffman won for Kramer versus Kramer. And
go.
I feel like the Academy was really in love with going back to the well for those five white actors over and over.
Wow.
With the exception of Scheider. So there we go. That's my number two. Martin Sheen. Everyone knows his name, and he has never been nominated for an Academy Award.
Wow.
And I saw him at a multiplex once, and I saw Charlie, and then I saw Emilio Estevez. I'm like, hey, look, it's the Sheens. As I was backing up, because I saw a parking space open. I feel like I've told this story on this show.
I haven't heard it.
And then I went up to the box office. I parked the car, and it was at the Agora movie theater there. It's still there, Brian. And I went up to the I was so excited because I was like probably 16, just got my license. And I saw the Sheens, Emilio, and they had just done a movie that I loved. Whatever that movie is that you like, the fucking dumpster movie.
Men at Work.
Yeah. And I walk up to the box office, and not only Martin and Emilio, but also Charlie and some broad, their mom, I found out later.
Wow.
We're all standing there staring at me. And then Martin takes a step towards me as I'm walking towards the box office. I'm like, holy shit, the Sheens want to talk to me. Why do they want to talk to me? And he's like, you realize you almost hit all of us, right? I'm like, what? He's like, when you threw it in reverse, like, we were right behind your car. You almost killed all of us.
Wow. The day the acting died.
Yeah.
How different would we remember Charlie Sheen if he died that day?
Very. Because it was before Platoon.
It was before
Platoon. No, it was not before Platoon. It was after Platoon.
Yeah, if you got your license. It was...
That's why I was excited, because of Platoon, because I was obsessed with Platoon. Yeah, I had my license.
How different would Charlie Sheen be remembered today?
How different would I be? You could have lost his legacy. What about me?
People would think of you as a horrible person who does bad things to people. So exactly the same.
Speaking of which, I know it's not really a good sequitur, but I'm good at not doing that. Non-sequitur. Central Park 5, the new Ken Burns documentary. I saw that today, and I wrote a brief little thing up there on the old AndersonCowan.com. Worth a checkout, but you don't have to run off and see it in the theater. But it will be up for best documentary, I would think. You know the Central Park 5?
Nope.
Central Park 5. It's a little documentary about five black youth. Ooh. Who were committed and sentenced to for a crime they didn't commit.
Ah.
Much like Paradise Lost. No. And 1989, it really shows a corrupt side to the New York Police Department. It's a story that definitely needed to be dredged back up all these years later. I'm serious when I say that. The corruption abounds, Brian. And
number one for me.
These pigs get their... When I say pigs, I'm not talking about cops. I'm talking about like bureaucrats. I don't like to. I don't call police officers pigs because I'm not a hippie from the 70s.
Yep. Fashion. You know, going about bacon.
So funny. Do you hear about the guy that got arrested because he had a picture of himself on Facebook of a of his tattoo, and his tattoo had a pig being shot, and the pig had like a name tag on it, and it was the name of his actual parole officer. So they took it. They arrested him as making a threat on a police officer.
Wow. You're constantly making a threat out of it's a tattoo.
I know. How stupid you got to be.
Number one for me. It's an obvious choice, but I had to go with it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have no choice but to go with the obvious one. Mm-hmm. Number one, Channing Tatum Steve Buscemi. Steve Buscemi is one of our great treasures of American acting. Mm-hmm. He's, I think he came up on the list when we had John Michael Biehn on, top five character actors. Steve Buscemi came to maybe to note first in Reservoir Dogs. He won the Independent Spirit Award for Best Supporting Actor that year in 1992 for Reservoir Dogs. And I was very, very surprised. I wonder why. I know that Miramax or whoever came out with Fargo has marketing campaigns for their Oscars. I know William H. Macy got an Oscar and it did very well at the awards, but was not nominated for Fargo.
I would like that to be outlawed. I don't like that. I think it's gross when they campaign. It's not right.
For Fargo, he was nominated for a Satellite Award for Best Supporting Actor, and I sought out Barton Fink this week because I was like, well, if I want to talk about John Turturro, I got to see Barton Fink once and for all. I really wish I'd had the opportunity to see Ghost World because Steve Buscemi was lauded for Ghost World. He won Best Supporting Actor for not only the Chicago Film Critics, but the New York Film Critics and the National Society of Film Critics, also an Independent Spirit Award and nominated for a Golden Globe and an AFI Award.
If
he was lauded for Ghost World.
Do top five saddest scenes, which I think we should do.
Sure.
This would definitely make the list for me.
We could do saddest scenes.
Ghost World. And it's all because of Buscemi's performance. He's so fantastic in this one particular scene. Yeah. Of all the Buscemi roles, I'd say probably Ghost World is his strongest. Better Billy Madison.
I would like to see it. I never got around to...
Better Billy Madison. I don't know if you'd like Ghost World.
Really?
I don't know if you would. Wow. I don't love Ghost World, but Buscemi is fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, he was honored by several outlets.
Fantastic.
And
so
he
bad
is
for
my number one American actor who has never been nominated for an Oscar.
So bad for the little guy. He's the modern-day Peter Lorre.
Really?
He looks like him.
I guess so. Yeah.
The bulging eyes.
Buggy
small,
eyes.
Small
Buggy
frame.
Eyes.
Small frame.
He's in your beloved Boardwalk Empire.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie. All right. Number one for me, Brad. You ready?
Yep.
This is a good one. This is a very good
Let's
one.
Hear it.
This is a good
Here
one.
Here we go.
And I'm also going to incorporate a little of fashion.
Oh!
Renee Zellweger thanked this man at her Oscar acceptance speech in 2003 for Best Supporting Role in Cold Mountain.
Okay.
Brian, he gained the world record 70 pounds for a role of his. He went on to gain another 45 pounds for a later role, Brian.
I want to say this is Vincent D'Onofrio.
He might have first seen him as Thor in Adventures in Babysitting.
Thor!
He's also in Mystic Pizza, JFK, the player, Ed Wood, as Orson Welles. Later, though, the voice was redubbed over because... Tim Burton did not like his performance in that one. Not his best role. But I'm talking mainly about Men in Black, Edgar, Men in Black, Vincent D'Onofrio,
Edgar Suit.
I'm talking about, has never been fucking nominated. The Cell, as Carl in The Cell. Talk about Pooh Bear and Salt and Sea.
Salt and Sea, with no nose.
And, of course, his first feature role is Gomer Pyle in a Full Metal Jacket. But now, Brian, now he's back. Because, you see, we lost him to my mom's show, Law
and
Order.
Yeah, he was at, like, CSI.
And if I wanted to enjoy Vincent D'Onofrio for the last 5-6 years, I would have had to go over and hang out with mom.
It's pretty tough.
And she watches TV in her bed with her 5 dogs.
And you would have had to do that.
And I would have had to do that. And my dad wanders around, and it's just tough. Plus, he's dull. He's boring. But here's a funny...
Plus, you stopped sleeping between them in their bed when you were, like, 13 or 14.
Hilarious. Here's a funny story Jay Moore told. It's a real-life story. Jay Moore, on the set of Law & Order, he was very, very excited to be working with Vincent D'Onofrio because he's one of his all-time favorite actors. And so he really, Jay Moore really studied up his lines, and he knew them all by heart. And he was playing a bereaved father who had just lost his son or something. So he's sharing an actual scene with Vincent D'Onofrio, right? And he goes out there and he starts doing, and Jay Moore starts doing his role. And D'Onofrio actually yells cut right in the middle of Jay Moore's monologue. And he goes over to Jay Moore and he goes, listen, you're terrible. You're doing everything wrong. You just lost your fucking son. He's directing Jay Moore.
Wow.
And Jay Moore's just completely crushed and beside himself because, you know, one of his heroes is pretty much just ripping him apart. But he said that actually when he went back and he was so rattled that he actually read the lines right and did a much better job as a result.
Wow.
But what I want to talk about is a movie that I saw this week, Brian. And I put it on my top 5 most anticipated fall movies.
Okay.
I was kind of half joking. I was excited Vincent D'Onofrio was coming back to the big screen, but it's a movie called Chained. I put it on there for the irony's sake because I knew that you were going to have Django Unchained. But I put Chained on there.
I don't think I had Django, by the way.
I was expecting you to.
Okay.
Jennifer Chambers Lynch, David Lynch's daughter. It's like her 4th or 5th movie. She made Boxing Helena, which you forget because it was long ago.
Oh, a long time ago.
And she made it when she was like, she's the youngest female writer-director ever.
Wow.
She made Boxing Helena and then took like a 15-year hiatus. But she made that Surveillance, which I really liked last year. And this year she came out with Chained. It came out October 2nd, video on demand, and DVD I sent away for it. It is a dark, dark, fucked up movie. It's the kind of movie, Brian, where I was thinking of you watching it, thinking of me laughing at certain parts because it is fucking hilarious.
That's ironic.
Throughout. Vincent D'Onofrio throws himself at this role. You could tell he was hungry for like another fun, disturbing, fucked up role. He is fucking amazing as Bob.
Wow.
He's hilarious. He actually, story is he went to his dentist before in preparation for this role and had his dentist make some kind of mouthpiece to help him talk in a certain fashion. Whole thing shot up in Canada. It's very minimalist in its style and mostly takes place in this house, his house, but it looks like a David Lynch house. It's beautiful. The minimalism of it is fucking amazing. The kid that's in the movie is great. It is dark. It involves torture and some rape, but it is by no means torture porn. It is all about the relationship between a serial killer and this kid that he is essentially raising. Not for the faint of heart, as they say, but Vincent D'Onofrio is fucking back. No way will he ever be nominated for this role.
Right.
He could easily be, but the Academy would never recognize something this fucking dark and, you know, far out there and, you know, small. But he could easily take a role where he would be nominated, and he's just the kind of guy that doesn't give a fuck.
Wow.
He takes roles for himself, and as a result, I don't know if he's ever going to take a role where he actually gets...
Yeah, I'm sure he must get the offers, you know what I mean, because he's a great actor.
He throws himself into these characters, total method actor. And
I remember the movie The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston and Vince
Vaughn. That's almost as impressive when he plays just the schlubby brother.
The only thing I remember from that worthless movie, and the movie is there's nothing going, it's completely disposable. The thing I remember from that movie is Vincent D'Onofrio's very bizarre turn as the brother.
Now, I'm going to say this. I love Daniel Day-Lewis. He might be the finest or one of he's definitely one of the finest actors we have. One of the greatest characters ever, Bill the Butcher. And then I love Daniel Plainview, his next role. But you still see, even as Lincoln, I still saw traces of Daniel Day-Lewis and I saw some traces of Daniel Plainview in there. And I can't say that about D'Onofrio. Watching him as Bob in this movie, he is so disgusting. His shirt's off all the time. He's fat. But he's hilarious.
Did Vincent D'Onofrio come up on our list of
he's
top
not
five
supposed
actors
to be
of the most range?
I use the word hilarious loosely. He's funny for me because
sure,
of the thing.
Sure.
I should call you Rabbit. Oh, his voice. I just loved his voice. I saw some people complaining on message boards saying that it's too similar to a movie called Bereavement with Bane, actually. Not the same movie
Michael
at
Bane?
All. I've seen Bereavement or parts of Bereavement, enough of Bereavement to know it's not the same movie. It's similar, but Bereavement's torture porn. Fuck that movie. This movie is art, and it's awesome.
Wow.
Chained. Hilarious. Awesome. Cringeworthy, terrifying. Not terrifying. Yeah. Yeah, there's some parts
you
that are really...
You brought it full circle. You said you number one on your list all the way back to Flick Fashions.
Edge of my seat a few times. But yeah, really... You know what, though? Fucking movies, man. The end, I'm not giving the end away, obviously. I don't do that here. We don't do that here. But it's like it tries to, so many movies try to get too clever. It's like just, there's nothing wrong with telling a good, solid story with, you know, you don't have to have these twists and turns and outsmart the audience or be like, oh, isn't that clever? It doesn't have, it could have just been what it was. And they tried to get a little too clever.
There you go.
Even like Old Boy, I fucking loved Old Boy. It didn't have to have that crazy ending. I still would have loved it. I find that in myself when I'm writing. It's like, oh, is this clever enough? Fuck it. Just tell a good story with good characters. It doesn't have to get all, like, clever.
Yeah.
It almost ruined it for me at the end. But love, love, love. Watch this one. Love, love, love. That Chained. 4 stars, Brian.
There you go.
4 stars.
Logan, listener top five. Want to hear what the listeners had to say.
All right. Number five, Martin Sheen.
Wow. And you can vote, by the way, at... Twitter and Facebook and all the social blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, usually I make the announcement on Tuesday or Wednesday.
There you go.
All right. Number four, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Two for two.
Number three, Sam Rockwell.
Hey.
Sam Rock.
Number two, John Goodman.
Almost made it.
And the number one American actor never nominated for an Oscar, as voted on by the listeners, is Steve Buscemi.
Wow, look at that. Every single one of ours is mentioned. I also put on Ben Gazzara, almost made the list. Brian Cox almost made my list.
Brian Cox is British.
That's a good point. Is he really?
Yes.
No.
He has a great American accent.
God damn it.
He was the first Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry, buddy.
No.
He was the first Hannibal Lecter.
Manhunter?
Yeah.
No.
It's Brian Cox. Save it for the British list.
Keith David.
Save it for the British list. Yeah.
Love that Keith David. I'm going to overdo the bat. Love that John Turturro had Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell, he will. And you know who else is going to for sure? And he was obviously way too green for me to put him down, but this is a serious actor who's going to be around forever. Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Kid's going to win a couple awards before.
I consider putting him on my list as well. The first actor I thought of, I didn't end up putting on the list, which is Bruce Willis. I would have liked to have found a role for him, but just got squeezed out. Also,
why'd you say it like that?
Tom Sizemore has been in some really good movies and done really well and has not gotten recognition.
Oh, Christ, Tom Sizemore. I have him on the list. Where the hell is my complete list?
The other thing's going
I totally
wrong
wrote down Tom.
J.K. Simmons is fantastic. I would like to see him get an Oscar at some point.
Love him.
And our boy Tony Shalhoub. Shalhoub, our boy.
Oh, yeah, Hannibal Lecter. You're right. Shalhoub, yes. Big night.
Let's wrap it up with our gambling. Let's gamble.
I don't like this.
No, we like it.
I don't like last week at all. Wow. I've been watching that goddamn thing not move.
Really?
Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
Last week, you guys gambled on Playing for Keeps. At the time,
I sure did.
Brian bid 33%, Anderson 64%, and then there were no reviews. Now, currently,
it hasn't gotten much better.
The Wednesday after release, the Rotten Tomatoes score is, wait for it, 3%.
Oh, it moved. It was 2% last I checked.
Oh, wow.
Now, it was like milk.
Another good review.
Logan, I'm sure you didn't have time to do the research because it's not that interesting, but is this the farthest off anyone's ever been from the final score?
Oh, settle down. Settle down. You're pretty far, too,
61%
fucker.
Away.
60? You are terrible at math.
You were 64, I thought.
I was here. I'm very good at math.
I don't think so because it's only 30% off.
No, the losing score is 61% off.
Oh, suggest that I was for. Oh, whatever, Bri.
I don't know.
Perhaps.
I don't have a record of all those
listeners,
things.
Listeners, let me know because that is hilarious to me. I should make you see this.
The ladies should be furious that the studios, whatever fucking dirtbag studio is, put this out. Like, I'm never going to work in this town. the way I talk, I need to stop. Seriously, I got to stop.
You're not going to work in this town.
I got to stop talking shit.
You're not going to work in this town.
No, there's no studio that ever want to touch the script that I'm writing right now. Holy shit, it's awful. Awful in a great way, let me say.
Sure.
Listen.
Awfully great.
They are releasing this for you broads, hoping that some guys will take you to this movie and sit through it, and you should demand more. You should demand better.
They're showing contempt.
They're showing that they can release a 3% critic-approved movie to you guys, and it's still going to make money. And you know what? I bet it did. I don't look at box office because that's gross. Does it make any money?
My mom would love a movie like this.
Mm-hmm. His fucking face with that look, it looks like a fake beard. It makes me so upset every time I see it. It's gross, well, gross, gross.
You're going to have to see it. No, you're not.
Disgust.
I'll make you see it.
Dingross.
I will not make you see it. I need you to look up a movie, Anderson, if it's on Netflix, because if it is, you're seeing it.
Okay.
Or Logan can look it up. Someone can look it up.
Do I have to send away for it? Or
you probably have to send away for it. It's. But I'm going to do you a favor, Anderson. I'm going to do you a favor. Because there's a movie out there called, it's a documentary. It's called Live Forever. And it's one of my favorite documentaries. It's a music documentary. And it's about the Britpop sensation, the Britpop movement of the early 90s, mid-90s.
It's How to Live Forever, yes. Okay, I will watch that.
It's just called Live Forever.
Mm-hmm. It is not available on streaming.
Yes, but you can send away.
How to
gonna
Live
love
Forever,
it.
Okay.
You're going to love
watch it. How to Live Forever.
Don't watch that.
I already did.
Yes, add Live Forever to your queue. Right to the top, because you're going to love it. You're going to love it. And you know what?
Wait, it's about Oasis and Blur and Pulp? No!
You're going to crank that shit
Awful.
Up. Crank it up.
Dude, I don't like these bands.
You're going to love it.
Are they good characters?
It's gonna
Good story? Because I don't like the bands.
The guy from Blur, Damon Albarn, is so
he's a cunt.
Bizarrely sad.
I said it finally. I didn't want to this episode, but he's a dick.
Yeah, but you know what? For British people, you can say cunt. He's a cunt.
Oh, he's a cunt. He's cunty. He's very cunty. I dealt with him on Loveline years ago when he was in for Gorillas in the Mist or whatever the fucking
Gorillas.
Band. Gorillas, yeah.
Did
not appreciate
his
attitude.
His scenes are so profoundly, sadly bizarre that you're going to enjoy them because he just drifts off.
Is this as good as Dig?
Disillusioned.
Is it as good as Dig?
What is Dig?
God damn it. God damn it.
What is Dig?
Dig's a great documentary. It's the greatest music documentary ever made. Probably.
Better than Hated?
Wait, I had it. No, that's true. But it was on my list. What we did with Bobcat.
Oh,
talked about it at length. Do you remember anything that this man
nothing,
says?
Nothing
this man
at all.
Is me.
What's it about?
Jones, Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Blue Mondays. No.
Is that it for today? Christ.
Nope. We got to gamble for...
Shit, that's right.
What are we doing next week?
More gambling.
This week, what else would we be gambling on other than The Hobbit?
That coming
unexpected
out?
Journey.
Shit, that's coming out, isn't
no,
it?
No, it's called A Very Expected Journey due to the massive success of the first trilogy.
I have a number.
That was the original title.
I have a number already.
They moved it. They changed the title. Hey, the original title of Chained was to be Rabbit. Rabbit. But the studio said, no, we will call it Chained.
Wow.
What kind of a fucking choice is that?
Does Chained
People are
going to
be confused. The kid's chained up in the house.
There you go.
But the kid's name is Rabbit.
Ooh, Rabbit is Chained.
I would call you Rabbit.
What if it was Chained Rabbit? All right, buddy.
Chained Rabbit would have been perfect.
I'd be perfect. A number. Number. For the Hobbit. Hobbit number.
Shit.
Hobbit number.
You know what?
First number that comes to mind.
I got it.
Is that an even 100?
I'm making art because...
Something no one will ever see.
You will.
Wow.
87.
87. I said 77.
Honor of Sidney Crosby. You're going with Paul Coffey.
77. 77.
I'm going with Sidney Crosby.
All right, the Wednesday before release with 85 reviews.
Mm-hmm.
The current Rotten Tomatoes score is 73%.
Wow.
Shit!
Wow.
Fuck me!
It could go up.
No, it won't go
it
up.
It won't go up.
I should have gone with my own taste, which is this trailer is goddamn close to unwatchable. It just looks like a beer commercial from the 70s.
Wow,
awful.
A beer commercial?
Yes.
I don't know what that means.
Because they're all drinking.
Oh, well, they're on the table like Prost.
Yes, it looks like something that I don't want to ever watch.
Precious.
Fucking pandering at the end.
I'll try and have a good movie for you next
week. What is a packet?
I'll try and have a good movie for you.
Are you going to see this fucking thing?
Probably not. Well, I'll probably see it at some point. I'm enthusiastic about it. I
think that the action stuff is probably going to be pretty good. If it's anything like the last ones, obviously it'll be great. However, it's all the meandering with the fucking hobbits that I cannot...
Yeah, a lot of wandering. A lot of wandering hobbits.
Well, you got two more movies to look forward to after this.
Yeah.
What?
It's a trilogy.
They're breaking up into three.
Oh, of course.
You didn't know about that?
Of course. They
One
are.
Book, three movies.
Hey, you know what? That's most books you could
it's
probably break into three movies.
It's a good tagline right there.
You know what? You probably could.
Some books should be broken up into three movies.
A lot of books should be.
Thank you, Metric, and I want to remind everyone to check out the contest or the free albums we're giving away.
Why
just
are we doing
retweet
that?
Or share on Facebook and Twitter. Logan's post on Friday, and you have a chance to win the album for Metric.
Is
Metric
it really?
Synthetica is the album.
Guys, I told you I had to go get booze for my habit before the time.
We talked ourselves
late.
Out, buddy.
Fucking A.
It was a good episode. We talked a lot.
Well, how am I supposed to get to sleep?
Sorry, dude. Sorry, bro.
Don't call me that. All right.
Facebook, facebook.com/thefilmball is where you go. Twitter @thefilmball is where you go. Anderson and Brian is where you go. Oh, you can see the ILX video that Logan edited.
The what?
And ILX, the Acura ILX video.
We have an ad on our site?
It's not an ad. It's a fun video.
Of course it's an ad.
But it's a fun video. It's like five minutes. Like,
you know what? If we're going to put that up, can we also put up, God, I'm self-defeatist. Can we also put up Zach Galifianakis's and Tim and Eric's?
Oh, that's old.
Absolute Vodka.
That's years old.
Yeah, I know. So what? It's old.
You're like the kid who's like, oh.
So is Martin Sheen. He's number two on my list.
You're like when the parents want to put up the sibling's like test that got an A. You're like, hold on, I have a test too. It's right here. It's like
no, not that at all. Because I'm not Zach Galifianakis. I'm like, okay, here's my friend Johnny's test too. Put that on the fridge.
Thank you. I appreciate you undermining my efforts.
And he's not my friend.
My creative efforts.
It's even worse than that.
It's something creative I did. Anders, maybe you should check it out.
You driving around in Acura and having Logan shoot you?
I'll give you a tease. It's a mobile video game. Mobile game show. Mobile game show.
I'm so confused. I'll definitely check it out. Did I support you in whatever you do?
You do not. You're lying right there.
No, I totally do. What don't I support you at?
It's good.
I would have loved to have come to your party. I couldn't do it. I was working.
You didn't support my Christmas party?
I couldn't do it. I wanted to. I felt bad. And I almost texted you during. I did. Didn't I?
AndersonandBrian.com is where you go for the video.
Did I text you?
You may have. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I'll check. The Amazon banner, thanks again for all you're doing. We appreciate it. And AndersonandBrian.com. Until next time.
I should call you Rabbit.
You should. For who?
That's my new sign off.
No.
I laughed so loud when he said that. In chains, that I almost woke up the wife, and I was horrified that she was going to come out and see what I was watching. Because, I mean, if you wander into this movie like while you're watching it, and like your loved one comes in and it says, "What are you watching, honey?" and you're watching in the dark or something, it does not look right. It is awful. It looks terrible. And the things that you're watching that happen to poor, innocent women, I mean, I feel like I'm a misogynist because I love this, but I don't love it because of that. I love it because it's an Onofrio's Bob. Holy shit. We do it for Van Gogh. It's too late in the day, too late.